Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor is a...
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the middle.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Hello everyone and welcome to RJP's coverage of Australian Survivor Blood vs Water. I'm your host Shannon Guss, here to talk about week 8, and you probably have a lot of feelings about this week, and that's a good thing. Whether you're mad at the twist, or sad that Sam has gone home, or happy that Sam has gone home, whatever it is, I hope you were riveted by at least quite a lot of action that we got in this week. I'm excited about it. I have so much to talk about this week, and I'm so glad that I have such a phenomenal guest with me to break it all down. Please welcome Sam and Mark's former cast member as well, a super fan, a star player. It is the great Tessa O'Halloran. Tessa, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, Shannon. Feeling extremely lucky to have scored this week.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you mentioned the feelings right up front, because I just had so many feelings this week. Well, I just watched it today, actually. So I've had so many feelings today, and it's a lot, and I think I need to talk through it all.
Yeah, I mean, same. I watched these episodes so many times, and like the Josh scene that I watched at least 3 times, I cried every single time. There was not one time I didn't cry. Every single time. That's crazy.
I can't either. Oh, it'll make me cry just thinking about it too much again. It's a lot to see that.
Yeah. That's what people tune in for, I think. People tune in to just hear us weeping together through the podcast 1 minute in.
So beautiful.
That's what they want. Weeping about TV aside, Deza, how are you going? You know, we spoke to you last for the last Australian Survivor season. You aren't on social media a lot. So when we need the takes, we need to hear from you. Like, I invite you on the podcast and we get to talk to you, which is great. But like, how are you going otherwise?
Yeah, great. I can't remember what I was doing last time we talked, but since then we have been to France and back. We left the country.
Oh my gosh.
Which is pretty cool. And then the week we came back with our jet-lagged one-year-old, we moved house. Ooh. And Ben and I both started new jobs. And I sold my old apartment. So we've been up to it a lot, actually.
Oh, my gosh, what's going on?
Yeah, just lots of life stuff going on. Jet lag was real with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like we've been back for about a month and just have finally settled back into life now.
Oh my God. That's so alien to me at this time. Like traveling internationally is just like, I see people doing it on social media and I'm like, and every single time I'm like, why aren't I there? Like I watched these like couples from The Bachelor as well. One of them was just in France. I'm like, why am I not in France? So the jealousy is real.
You know, the novelty wore off really quickly, though, once you're on the plane. We were like, oh, so excited to be on a plane again. And then within, probably 16 minutes, we'd been through all of Aggie's games. She'd eaten all her snack. I'm like, what can we do for the next 24 hours of this trip?
But then you were in France, so...
Then we were in France, yeah. That's true. And that was very worth it. See my husband's family. That was really cool.
That's amazing.
We've been busy.
Yeah.
But always made time for Survivor.
Yes, and we appreciate it that you've come on to talk about what have to be hours 100 through 110 of the season, just roughly counting.
Especially when we went backwards, lost four people and then came back again.
I know, that's the worst, when you're not even making progress and you're like, oh, no, you know the one they say, like, one step forward, three steps back, like it literally was.
Yeah.
We went back to nine, but this was not the worst thing, and we'll talk about it, but production made sure it would not happen. The worst thing, and what I think... without the big twist would have happened, having interviewed Jordan, and Jordan was like, we wanted to stay till six. It would have made a lot of sense for Sam and Mark to keep going with that. We could have just had the Perga 3 go revolving door out of the game, and truly, truly things would have been set on fire. But through some maybe not so great means, production were like, no, put in a massive twist. We got the split people have wanted. What are your thoughts on this week, and what have been your feelings about the season up until this week?
I mean, my biggest feeling about the season is that blood versus water is an excellent theme.
Mm-hmm.
Would never, ever, ever want to do it myself. That's some kind of torture. But it's really delivered. It's delivered on a lot of levels. With the twists, I just felt exhausted by the whole bringing back three people thing. And I was thinking as I watched it, like, I'm exhausted as a viewer. That we have just gone to all the effort of getting rid of all these people.
We as viewers went to the effort. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't think about how tiring I would find that.
We all did that together. We all had to put in that energy. And they all came back. I completely agree.
Really? Like, I'm tired. It's been a long week. And they're all back again.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, like, there was a shot. I think it was Sam, who probably was more exhausted by this than anyone. And she just looked wiped. And I thought, no wonder, like, it's so hard at that stage of the game. And to have all your work just randomly undone, like, that is so painful. I mean, KJ's advantage was interesting.
Mm.
You'd hate to have it happen to you at that late stage, and it has such heavy implications for the end game. But at least I enjoyed seeing her use it aggressively.
Yeah.
So good came out of it.
Yeah. The flip was what we've been waiting for so many weeks. The move was interesting in and of itself. Like, she got the advantage, and we'll talk about the advantage itself, but then she used it really well. The TV that came out of it was really interesting, but we did all sell our souls a little bit with this, like, super overpowered advantage that really screwed over Jordan, but it's fine because we are not invested in Jordan. Like, so, I mean, look, it also screwed over Sam. Like, you know, it reminded me of Haley last season. Like, she had to expend a lot of social capital to fight against, like, a really, really difficult twist, one of many that she's had to fight against this season. And the next episode, it caught up to her, so it reminded me of that.
I felt like that dropping Geordie back into the game particularly, it's like, to me, he's a bit of a Henry-ish character. If in our season at, like, six, Henry was suddenly dropped back into the game as this, like, winner contender with all this capital and, like, built-in alliance, it's just so game-changing. I just feel, exhausted for them.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, that's the first thing is the purgatory twist that they're fighting against. And then even beyond that, I still believe they would have come back and all been sent out. But then it's the T-twist, which I guess is what we're calling it, the T-whist, I don't know, where KJ can send out three people. You know, we saw where George can send out half the tribe. She can send out a third. But she has all the information. George did it in 2 days, you know. She knows all the dynamics, so she can perfectly play it, which she does, and that's a credit to her. But I don't like to, you know, I'm the first person to jump on anyone who's like, oh, they hide idols for the people they like, or they put, you know, redemption rock signs for the people they like. I'm like, but Sandra went, let's not do that. I'm not suspicious of this twist. I'm gonna say, for a couple of reasons, the main one being she didn't get the advantage. So part of me is a little concerned that had Sam or Mark or someone else gotten the advantage, that they go with a clue that's not like, go down by a trail and down to the lake and there you will find the thing that's at stake. Like, literally it was right there, but they can decide based on the board tea. Yeah, that, like, she can send out a third of the time.
Production was like, even production said, you can't miss it. They're pretty much like, here.
Yeah. They're like, the only reason it's not in your hand and you have to go find it is because maybe we want some control over it. And that control is that who buys the tea. If a member of, and I hate to put that on production because I don't want that to be true, but if a member of the majority buys tea, are they getting a challenge advantage? I can't say for sure that they're not. It's kind of like the Cook Islands bottle twist. Like, I don't want that to be true, but it's very possible that had I actually got the message in the bottle that, like, maybe, you know, it's not we're voting out two people, it's a feast, or, you know, like, who knows? So that to me was suspect.
In general, I'm very anti the whole production interferes with the actual process of the game. Like, you know, when twists happen and the challenges they put in and all that, I think it's done well in advance and they don't have the scope to, they don't have the flexibility to change that to do it, to make things happen. But in this case, the fact that the advantage that she found was not the advantage itself does seem to leave them a lot of wiggle room.
Three of you will come back from purgatory, and now three of you can come back and leave tribal council just in case.
And it was prop light too. It was the kind of thing that they could change at last minute.
I'm honestly surprised that the clue wasn't, okay, you get immunity, but you can only save people whose names rhyme with Doughty. And like, yeah, like genuinely, I'm a little shocked. So it was way too powerful and a little suspect, and we're going to get through that. So anyway, but then it led to everything else. And I think the headline is Sam goes home. I was shocked. I was writing my notes and I was like, oh, well, Sam can't go here because it's not her time. Her time is either to win or to get to the end and to lose. And I really thought it was the first one. I was writing those notes down when the fifth Sam vote came out, like my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah, I actually was late. Like I said, I watched this today and had messaged an announcement with season two group chat saying, Mark and Sam, you guys are blitzing it. So proud of you guys.
Yeah.
Because it was inconceivable to me.
Yeah.
Sam at least wasn't going to the end.
I know.
And so now I've caught up late and I'm like, oh, sorry.
Never mind. No.
Phone death.
Yeah,
crazy. But I mean, I do think it's interesting in terms of, obviously, we watch too much Survivor and our edit reading thinking that Sam has to get to the end. But I do think it's interesting that now, to me, the field feels a lot more open. There's no clear front runner for the win from an edit point of view.
Well, because Australian Survivor in the last three seasons has, like, shoved the winner down your throat, and that would have been Sam. Like, it's been Sam's story. I mean, Geordie's well, but Geordie's, like, a character edit, kind of like George was to me. Like, Sam had the winner edit. Apparently, Rob's fact checker said that from the merge, Sam and Geordie have had 50% of the confessionals. So that gives a bit of an understanding. And now it's wide open. Like, we were talking about this a little bit offline. We are in strong disagreement now of like, who... Because I think, for me, like, I transfer the winner pick over to Mark, which would not be a typical winner pick. I mean, a winner edit, especially for like a big, strong guy. Would be very different from David's, I guess. But you were saying Josh.
Well, to me, Josh strategically has played a fantastic game. I think that he has been, you know, they keep calling him the linchpin. Every second episode we hear about Josh the linchpin, and from somebody else. Josh is not sitting there being like, I'm the linchpin. Which, you know, people, like, that would be his nickname, like the Joker.
That's a terrible nickname.
Yeah.
I'm the linchpin. That's what they call me.
I am the linchpin.
Yeah. We'll see you in the next five seasons. Don't worry about it.
I pivot in the night.
Yeah.
No, but to me, he's been playing a really, really strong game. And I think that he's started to come out a lot more strongly the last, like, 2 weeks. You know, late into the merge, we're hearing his story a lot more, and I just think, like, maybe it's just a funny lopsided edit and it's been a little bit too clear cut earlier on, and now they've started to focus on Josh.
I would put Josh last in if I had to pick now and order them of how likely
you by wouldn't edit.
I would
not below like Chrissy and no Shay.
Nope,
we barely heard Shay.
Yes, but they don't know how to edit Shay. She is a woman. She's been on the bottom. They would edit her quieter even if she won, I think. I still don't think Shay would win.
No, she's some sort of, like, beautiful yogi princess.
Yeah, like, we see her. But do the editors think we need to hear from her? Like, I don't know. Like, Josh, to me, has been, and I've been saying this and continues to be, the worst edited part of the season.
Alpha male.
Yeah, well, that too. But also just, like, he has been really strong. He has been really strategic. He should be, to me, the other edit winner contender that has been, like, that other pole to Sam and Mark. But he had 9 episodes in a row where he didn't get a confessional. In the first, I think, 9 episodes, he had 2 episodes of confessional. He got, like, 1 in the first episode, and then he had, like, 8 off or something. It was dire.
I mean, he has barely put a foot wrong. Sometimes I just think maybe it has just been too clean.
No,
he has played
not
a
for the winner.
Clean game
until now, which we'll talk about. They called him Harvey Dent, and then
he got
the most two-faced move.
Like 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when he literally, it didn't work with anyone in the entire tribe.
Yeah.
But I think for Josh, he has been the biggest edit black hole for me because there was so much to show. Like, if KJ wins, we'll be like, yeah, they didn't know how to edit a quiet game, a more passive game, a game where she was, like, willfully offering herself up to the majority. Like, they didn't know how to tell such a complex story. They can tell Josh's simple story. He was the leader. He's now lost some of that control. He'll fight back and he'll win. Like, I see the pathway for him for sure. I mean, I actually think, like, to me, he's going to be out next. Just based on his last move.
It's good but boring, though.
They don't care about boring.
It's good but boring.
But they could do it. I think. I really think that there's a story there that they could cleanly and simply tell. Like, they like clean stories. They like obvious thing. Like, it's more complicated to tell what's Shay doing or what's KJ doing. Like, how are we going to make this make sense? What's Juicy Dave doing? What's Chrissy doing?
But then, how do we justify Mark? Because, I mean, Mark has been dwarfed by Sam in this season, just from the TV product that we've been served.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think Mark would win, but I do think now he has the strongest, most consistent story.
I think he's played a really good game, but if Mark is the winner, he's had a weird edit.
Yeah, which honestly, I mean, we'll talk about it. The fact that we can debate this, I like that. Like, I'm really sad that Sam is gone, obviously.
Yeah.
She was the player of the season, but it's so refreshing to me that we don't know, that it's so different to, like remembering talking about Dave and Haley and Pia, where it was like, there's pretty much no other clear-cut option at times, especially with Haley. It was like, who else is it going to be?
Yeah.
So to have this debate is the point.
Yeah.
And I love that. While I'm devastated, I'm very refreshed by it. And that's fun for me. And like a lot of me wants someone really quiet to win, because then next season it's about the future, because then forevermore we won't be saying, well, they must be the winner, because it's like, well, but anyone can win, even with a really bad edit. So it's about the future for me, and that's why this is so important. So I'm like, other than the devastation for Sam, like, I am enthused by, I mean, they probably, if they edit the winner badly, that's also not good.
41 spoilers, the US season, just like heads up, time to skip if you haven't watched it.
No, it's fine. It was months ago.
But I wasn't satisfied with an Erica win. I'd like to see the story of the winner. You know,
but there's a line. I think, and AU is so far from the line. Like, they don't know how to tell the story in a way, or they haven't for the last few seasons, in a way that's even remotely subtle. Like, can we get the clues without, like, it being spoon-fed to us? And hopefully that's what they'll create with whoever wins this season. But
I wouldn't be mad if Josh win.
Josh didn't get confessionals for the whole, like, and all we knew about him was being a pilot.
Yeah.
And so he gets this moment here where he's having a baby, he's had fertility struggles. It's so beautiful. Even in, like, not knowing much about Josh, you feel connected to that moment. They could have built that up.
Yeah.
We could have heard this whole time. It was the same thing with Flick last season. I felt like Flick didn't have
absolutely
the edit to win, because we would have heard about her mom the whole time. And then something happens that we need to know. We hear it. But then why aren't you telling us her story before we need to hear it? And it's the same thing with Josh. The whole time they can, you know, refact check in if they need to. They can, like, retcon for us confessionals that he's doing in the future, but like, talking about his fertility struggles, talking about IVF, so it means more to us. And they still chose not to. Like, that's how little Josh's story has meant to the editors. Like, I truly would put him last in who I would predict wins.
I don't know. I would have even just thought, for like the emotional juice of that moment, that we'd get some
juice?
Sort of lead up. Oh yeah,
of all the words. Invite you on my podcast.
They've incepted me. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, look, we were talking about, we were crying about that moment. Is that a winner moment for you? Is that the Jeremy Collins moment for you?
I don't think it was a smart moment. I mean, it just upped his, because I think in game, they've got to be looking at Josh's, like, to me, it's probably Josh, Mark and Jordy who are the possible winners at this point. I don't think I'm missing anyone, like, after this week. And it's just upped his threat level that much.
Mm.
I mean, not that, like, I guess if you know, if that was my partner and I was in the outside world, I'd probably send it in too. But, like, definitely it's risky for his end game.
Yeah, you wish he got to read it alone, because it's a beautiful moment, but
so many
he's
reasons.
A big threat.
So many reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and part of the reason I was crying, I told my husband after, I'm like, do you remember when I told you I was pregnant? And I'm sure so many people were watching this. Like, it's just such a personal, intense thing to go through.
Mm. Yeah.
Brave to do it on camera.
Yeah, well, he needed to know. Like, he's been here for weeks and she's probably been trying. Like, think about how many things he hasn't won. Like, the video, you know, when Geordie won it didn't take him, like, there's probably just a video somewhere of her being like, oh, my God, and he'll never get to see it. So she's obviously been trying to communicate with him. And this is another thing in terms of story where, like, I did think this was a beautiful moment, but I was thinking so much of the reason this is affecting me is not actually based on the story they've been telling. Like, firstly, if I saw someone go through this, like, on the street, like a stranger, I would probably cry. So that's the first thing. It's just, yeah, like, a beautiful thing to watch in human experience. But also, okay, so we haven't known that Josh has had fertility struggles. We're finding out in this moment. All right. Catching up to that. Then we haven't known that Josh and Chrissy until this week are like super tight, but we've heard it kind of off the show. Mm. All right, they're really tight. For me, what got me was Chrissy crying next to him. And I tweeted about this, like, we've talked about in the podcast, she's had her own massive fertility struggles, adopted three beautiful kids, and knowing how close they are and knowing what that is to her, like, that got me. But I'm like, yeah, none of this is actually on the show. And I know US Survivor would be like, this is the story. But instead, I have to, like, extrapolate that story from just, like, outside research. And it was, I think, a more beautiful story for that context. So that, to me, like, this is the missing story that I think a more prominent character to become a winner would have already.
Gosh, I sort of hope so, but at the same time, I don't hope so, because regardless of whether you're the winner or not, that's a story that if they want to share it, like, surely the audience wants to receive it. It's incredible.
You think, but yet, have we?
To me, it's almost irrespective. It's almost irrespective of whether they're the winner or not.
Be.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's what US Survivor is doing a lot better than Australian Survivor right now. But, like, we don't just watch... I talk a lot about the strategy, but we don't just watch for that. Like, to me, it's only interesting if you care about the people, and that's the kind of thing that makes you care about the people.
Yeah, and, like, this whole season, since the preview, I'm like, oh, well, I stalked Josh, and I noticed that, like, he's expecting a baby, and then I try to work out the dates of conception to be like, is this something he would know? And this is why I work out dates of conception, you know, because I know it's going to become narratively important. Do you think that I do it for my own amusement? No, this is podcast work. So that's why I'm working it out. And I was like, maybe he'd know. And then the whole season, I was like, well, why are they talking about how he's an expectant father? Like, if he was, you know, winning contender, but he didn't know. But they could still put in stuff about, like, how he's been trying to have a kid. And that's why he needs money for the fertility treatment. So that's literally what they were trying to do. Before the
show, did the show know, like, to ask him the questions? Maybe the show didn't know.
The show tomorrow could film him the day after he finds out, talking about how much he wants to have a baby, and then put it in with his big beard and take out the buff and put it in an episode 3 confessional. And we know that they would. Well, they put half of it in episode 3 confessional. So the show can do whatever the hell they want to do. So it's not due to a lack of resources. Like,
no, you're so right. That's giving them way too much credit.
Yeah. Like, yeah, so well, the show just didn't know until now, and they couldn't put in a confessional where he so clearly progressed.
It would hurt
the
their integrity.
The integrity is the product.
To
like,
buy
no,
it back in.
No, it's like that. Yeah, come on. No.
Who are we kidding?
Exactly.
Yeah, giggles.
Yeah. So.
Disappointing anyway.
Yeah. It was a beautiful moment. I love that moment. I also loved having an auction. Like, that alone is so fun. Like, the second we even get to the auction, I'm like, well, now I'm having fun, because we don't get it on US Survivor.
Love the auction.
Very lucky to have it. Auction, sorry, Australian, not Australian, my weird accent. but how fun to have an auction, like, as super fans, and you got to experience it. Like, that's always, to me, like, a highlight.
Yeah, so into the auction. It's always fun.
Mm-hmm. I was yelling at my TV because I just felt like, and this is like, you as a Survivor player, like, you come in with the real insight here, but I was like, especially like when you find out what ended up happening, Geordie, so much respect, bids on the rock, Sam and Mark protecting so hard, which is why it's so unfortunate that Sam goes for the twist, that she did everything to protect against, literally bid on Vegemite toast, which is disgusting. But even like, I'm not Australian, I hate Vegemite.
I think that'd be really satisfying in the moment. Probably better for her guts than most of the other options.
I wouldn't be eating it, personally. But I like did the Instagram poll where they're like, would you bid on this? I was like, no, because it was all meat and Vegemite. And then the only thing I would have bid on was the tea. So,
too funny. I wouldn't eat that sandwich. Like, flash forward to Shannon on Survivor in 5 years' time.
No.
Damage.
I'm the kind of person that, like, if I don't want to eat that thing, I will starve. Like, that's... which, like, remember, like, Survivor New Zealand, I remember Adam was like, I'm just not going to eat the rice. And he was just starving. That would be me.
I do remember that. I thought that was mad, too. Anyway, yeah, go on.
No, but my point is that... So, Mark, Sam, Geordie putting everything into it. Even KJ, who gets the advantage, does bid on a covered item, was bidding on food. Josh, Jordan's going to go home for this. Not protecting against anything. Like a 2-1 majority to minority rate. And they can't protect against a minority. And, like, I know it's a lot to ask because they're all starving and it's been weeks. And, like, but, like, when you're such a big target, we've got the Purga 3 coming back when you know that it's, like, exactly where they're going to put something. And you wouldn't think it's something that massive. But I was just like, this is an indictment on pretty much everyone who didn't dedicate themselves to this. Like, KJ and Shay bidding on food, like, you just came back from purgatory, like, yes, like, no, bid on, like, do what Geordie's doing, put everything into this, is your shot. And it actually works out for KJ, but it felt less deserved because she was bidding on food.
Yeah, but you forget how little Survivor some people have watched before they actually go out and play Survivor. Like, you can see Sam's immediately, like, we need to get the advantage, we need to make sure we get the advantage. Pretty sure a lot of them are like, oh, food, yay, like... Not because they're not competitive.
But that makes me mad in different ways.
They don't know it's there.
That's worse. Like, I mean, like, I don't know if it's worse. Like, you know it's there and you're just not dedicated to it. I'm kind of mad about that. But, like, you didn't watch one auction, so you don't know how much this means. I might hate that more. So, Jordan goes for this. Like, Jordan, what did he get? A palmy? $500,000 palmy, Jordan. Because if you just outbidding KJ on that, or at least taking her to Rocks... Because two of you should be able to go for every covered item with every single minority member, technically.
Yeah.
Then did the majority break? No, because she didn't get that advantage. So,
yeah,
big miss.
I mean, whatever advantage it would have been if Marcos hadn't gotten it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's too harsh because, exactly. Then you would have had a challenge advantage, Jordan. Didn't you want a challenge advantage? But, like,
it sort of annoys me that they always hide the advantage, though. Like, I would prefer they actually just were like, advantage scroll. I know you're going to get four people who go to $500 and lose all their money and go to Rocks and the other people are going to eat.
I can agree with that. Because I think that, like, we see where the intentionality lies and, like, at least we see what people value and we saw what Geordie, Mark and Sam were thinking about. And then they just got unlucky. And you're always going to get unlucky, you know, with the Rock. But they even got unlucky on, like, okay, well, they went to Rocks for, like, steak. They should be knowing what they're bidding on and knowing how much chance they have and then taking a chance on that. Okay, you have a 1 in 3 chance to pick a Rock to get an advantage, not like, oh, and you got to say, oh, and the last one, when everyone protecting against it has already paid all their money, that's the one that had the advantage, just due to, again, like, nothing meaningful. I would agree.
Yeah. I almost always don't want any luck, though, where, like, I know that there's always going to be parts of the game that are luck. But where production has control over it, I'd rather that you can be strategic and see people make their choice.
Yeah. I will say this, like, I'm probably being a little high just because it went so poorly, but they never would have thought the advantage could be this, probably. Like, even if it's an idol, then you have idols to protect. You have Mark's idol. You can split the vote. They would think it's okay. They wouldn't think it's like three of you can either be safe or you can, like, really break the numbers in that way. But I was just like, every time went back and watched Jordan bid on that palmy, I was like, Jordan, that's that's the game, you know?
I do think Jordan is probably not seeing himself as a target anyway.
That's true.
I think he was probably feeling pretty comfortable.
That's true.
He was very unlucky with this.
He was pretty unlucky. Yeah. So let's talk about it from everyone's perspective because, for me, like, I really love what KJ did, but I was just like, I just wish that you'd been all in on the betting, on bidding, because you got this game-breaking twist.
We should risk more for it, right?
Just that there was intentionality behind how much this meant to you. Like, it was for Geordie and what Sam and Mark were protecting against, because this game-breaking twist falls in your lap, and she uses it perfectly, and there are different ways she could have gone about it, and we'll discuss every one of those avenues, but it did fall in her lap, you know? So
absolutely.
That was just one thing for me.
But so, I did think that she did brilliantly with it.
She did.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver?
I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's start, I think, with Sam and Mark, because they had a lot going on in this week and a lot that they were, you know, talking about.
They did one of my absolute favorite things. And I know, like, a lot of people have been talking about Sam taking Jesse's idol as, like, the big move. I love Mark and Sam leading the two idols back to camp.
Mm.
I thought that was brilliant.
So it's a sacrifice plan, right? Well, I mean, yeah, and in terms of leaving the two idols back at camp, there's some murky possession stuff here. Like, that's and, like, good on them for finding the loophole. But, like, the fact that you can't pass an idol when you're voted out with it, and this is definitely riskier because you leave it at camp, maybe someone else could get it, you can't use it at tribal council for sure. But, like, it's a shared possession that no one has to claim because it's in his shoes. Because I'm pretty sure on Australian Survivor, if you find an idol someone else has buried, you can keep it. So that's, like, a looser possession law in general.
In the shoes is a bit cheeky. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, it's not in the bag. Yeah, because you can't take it out of the bag. You can't, so that they don't want to randomly bury it, so they put it in the shoes, which is like, so I don't even think that you should be able to pick up something someone else has buried. But firstly, you can do that, so that's the loophole. Then it's an issue, which is a different loophole. Yeah, you can't do that in the US.
What if I find an idol and I go and bury it somewhere, someone else can't come and dig it back up?
Pretty sure, no. I think you can in South Africa, but not in the US. I'm pretty sure they can't.
I think you should be able to. Like, if you keep it in your bag on your possession, it's yours. But when you buried it, it's actually not in your possession anymore.
Like, I only recently found out about this rule. Like, I think that, I mean, it's a definitely loose possession law, so that's where the loophole comes in. But it kind of feels, and I guess that it's part of the risk. Like, it's the risk that you can leave it somewhere. But the shoes, as you're saying, then make it, that makes it broader to me, because then it's like, it's kind of
the shoes
on your person.
Kind of your bag. Yeah. But I don't think so, because you can always take other people's shoes. Like, that's definitely, there's precedent for that. Well, yeah, like socks. And someone put socks in over the fire and burned a big hole in them once before. And, like,
I feel like that's what's murky.
Russell's hat.
You shouldn't be burning, like, other people's property anyway. Like, that, that's the thing.
There's a difference between shouldn't and can't. Like, yeah. I think you can. Yeah. I think that your possessions that are not in your bag are kind of open game.
Yeah. So, I mean, they talk about how worried they are about it. So they're taking that risk, and the possession law is around those kind of looser finding rules. You know, so they find the loophole, and as Mark has tweeted, like, you know, Sam has a legal degree. So that's, like, looking through the fine print of how they can kind of claim shared ownership of it, so that whoever gets voted out will come back to Mark's shoes and the idols. And is that what you love so much about it? Like, the legal part of it?
No, I loved it at 9 that they were like, we don't think either one of us is going home tonight. We're not going to risk that one of us goes home with an idol because we're not planning on playing it. So no matter what, as a safeguard at 9, the one of us that definitely comes back to camp is going to have both idols.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it at 8. I actually, like, I guess, you know, spoiler for later, but I thought they should have played the idol and kept Sam in the game at 8.
Mm.
I thought at 9, there's so far still to go that they're better off keeping the two idols, making sure they have them both for sure, on the much slimmer chance that one of them goes home, and they don't know about KJ's thing over this.
Yeah. Point. Yeah.
So I think that was very clever.
Well,
at 9, but not at 8.
The decision at 8 was a much more active sacrifice because it was like, how else is this really going to go? Like, unless you're going to go to Rocks, the Dave stuff seemed super vague, like not a lot really they can go on that. Sam thinks that she has maybe implicit immunity. They won't vote for her with the idol, but Geordie has been that like active bait. So there's not a lot there. And I think Sam even said in the exit that she like knows how much the, you know, the heat was on her. And that was a pretty active sacrifice.
I think it was a very active sacrifice, but I don't like that sacrifice. I think that as Mark and Sam, they were better off having Sam still in the game at that stage, even if it meant burning an idol. I think the two of them, it means two bites at every immunity, two bites of the apple, you know what I mean?
Because
They're both really strong physical competitors as well. So they might end up with one of them immune. And I think the individual immunity necklace is actually a much more powerful tool in the late game than the idol, which has a limited lifespan anyway. It means that they've actually eliminated, presumably Geordie, who is a really big threat to whoever was going to be left in the game, one or the both of them. And they've taken him out and his vote out, and they've still got their two votes. To me, they were a lot better off with Sam still in the game there at 8, definitely, and with someone they definitely want out in Geordie gone than they are keeping the two idols.
Well, okay, well, in the idol versus Sam plan, those are all the pros pretty much. You also have like two sets of eyes and ears. So it's like, yeah, that extra kind of capital that you have. And I think definitely the chance to win immunity, that's a big, big one for sure. What you gain by keeping an idol over Sam is, firstly, you have the perception of kind of losing that threat level of the two of you when you're at that point at the 8, the only pair left. You make it seem more like you didn't have two idols, which is like still somehow like an ongoing, like, do they have two idols? So like now they haven't even played one on her. It seems like less so. So like Mark has that element of surprise. Mark now has had the crucial warning shot to kind of know more where he stands with Sam going out. He has two idols. He is closer to the end, which means, you know, obviously less time that he has to try and get there. And a big one that Sam talked about in exits was she goes to the jury and becomes a jury vote for him. She never wanted to sit next to him at the end. They never wanted to sit next to each other. So you go there, you try and soften things to the jury, and then eventually campaign for him and vote for him. So there are definitely pros to either plan.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about sitting on the jury as a sort of an advocate for the other person, so for Mark in this case. And like Sam's a great talker, and I'm sure that I've watched Jury Villa, and I'm sure that she will talk everyone around. I think that the threat level is something that is there for a good reason, and it makes them a really good winner candidate anyway, whoever gets to the end. I think having two of them there is kind of, you know, they've had the warning shot because either they played the idol correctly or they wasted it and they still get more information moving forward. And having the other one still there is almost like having an idol there. Like, it's still another life in the game because they've got someone has to take another shot at the pair of them, and there's still one of them left.
Yeah, they'd have the warning shot, but they would have less to protect against the warning shot. But I agree, they have another shield. Like, you still need to get rid of two out of the next seven rather than one with two idols out of the next seven. I do get it.
And the other thing that came out of watching Jury Villa is that it looks like Jordan made some wiggly eyes to Josh, and he's going to have an indication that they do in fact have that second idol. So I don't think, you know, I think that cat is out of the bag about the second idol, and people have not wanted to believe it. It hasn't suited them to believe it.
But even like a real case of
I don't believe it because I don't want to believe it. And now it's coming around and they're starting to turn on each other. They're going to believe in a second idol.
Yeah, I mean, I want to believe that that's true, but I've wanted to believe this whole time that they would believe it. Like, even Josh is voting confessional. He's like, something's going on. It's like, yes, Josh, they have a second idol. Like, exactly what Geordie's been saying. Something's weird. I can't put my finger on it, but something's going on.
Nobody is saying what it might be, but...
Yeah, I can have some feeling.
Like,
yeah, something strange is going on. And, like, Jordan's wearing a shirt that just says, like, Sam and Mark have two idols, and he's like, something's telling me. The shirt thing can be hard. I had cousins who told me, like, they did their pregnancy announcement, but their toddler was running around saying, like, I'm gonna be a big brother with the on his shirt. But, like, we couldn't, like, we didn't see it for, like, 2 hours because we didn't sit still. So, like, the shirt thing actually might be pretty tough. Yeah. So there's a lot of heat already on Sam and Mark. I think that the worst case scenario for me for them would be wasting an idol, because that's something you just didn't need to do. Like, at least if Sam goes, it's like, okay, well, she went, you know, like that. And that's a round taken, like, where, like, at least, like, one of you stays through this round and that's done. And we move on to, like, the final 7 or the final 8, if it had been the final 9, where, like, I've always thought, you know, the thing has always been, you know, better safe than sorry, play your idol if you're in danger. Worst case scenario is that you go home with it in your pocket, rather you just waste it. But for them, there's a really solid argument that is, you know, go home instead, just for one of them, and don't waste the idol. Yeah.
I definitely got that up until that.
Yeah, because 8 was more of a sure thing. Like, especially when they're going to tribal at 9 and not thinking that there's going to be this twist, then, like, the idea of just getting paranoid and wasting one is dire when they don't need it. When that would have been a real warning shot, whereas, like, this was more of a sure thing. But I mean, like, there's definitely a very solid argument that I'm probably leaning more to on the sacrifice plan. And a lot of it is on that jury stuff. And a lot of it is just kind of knowing where you stand. And Mark's just not battling out with the singles without this limelight on you. I guess it's just, like, how far can you take it? How many more rounds? Like, it's all about timing, right? Like, he has 2 idols, this many rounds, that's the math. Or she's there as a shield, or he's there as a shield, and that's the math. I think there's probably some evenness there, but I totally see the sacrifice plan. Also, it's kind of cool and really cool for the theme to actively sacrifice yourself in an episode where Jesus was talked about. So that's Macedonian Jesus comes back. Sam sacrificed herself for Mark for the good of the pair.
Yeah, there's something very biblical about the whole thing. And a little bit bloody.
Yeah. Ready. Yeah,
I don't know, maybe, like, how many times do women have to fall on their sword, Shannon?
I've seen that a lot. Like, her whole game was her sacrificing for Mark. I actually disagree. Like, firstly, we'll talk about it. Sam's almost definitely going to win the Chizzy. Whatever happened, she is the player of the season. It is her season. It reminds me of Shan last season. Shan went, I'm like, oh, this is the finale. And even as the rest of the season played out, it was the epilogue to Shan's story, and it continued to be Shan's story. And I completely expect that to be whatever happens here is the epilogue to Sam's story. She doesn't sacrifice for him. She comes up with the idea. She convinces him to the idea. Yeah. She does it for their pair. And, like, and you know how you, like, always, like, the question is always, like, would you rather, like, win and not be respected as much, or, like, have the most respected game but not win? It's like, Sam might do both. You know, like, she's like a fallen angel who was the hero who got taken out, and she might still get the money, and it will be very much due to her and her plan and her strategy and what she's done to get Mark here and through the game. And I don't want that to be, like, her lack of agency and her falling on her sword, because it was her idea. It was a very cool and innovative idea. It was an idea that I at least agree on, or that has, like, a lot of merit. And that to me is really strong and cool and with agency for me.
I mean, definitely with agency. Like, she wasn't pushed onto a sword. She took a very willing dive on there.
Yeah.
Mark said, like, do I play it for you? And she was like, no. And I think beautiful. That all along we've seen that they've been playing as a unit, so they want one of them to win, and they've been really clear about what's the best way to get one of us. And it makes me think of during the long Melbourne lockdown, my husband and I started playing this card game. It's meant to be for 4 people, but as 2, which is very sad and lonely. But we would each play as ourselves and another person.
Oh my gosh. You are telling way too much about what we went through in 2020. Don't tell the people what Melbourne was like. Because sometimes I talk about going around in my pajamas and I'm like, you weren't there. You don't understand. They understood at the bakery. They knew. They got it. They were all in the same place.
This only ended because my husband had a migraine and he hallucinated cards flashing in front of his eyes. And we were like, oh, we have to stop. But anyway.
Please don't tell the people what we were like. Don't do it. Is that never talking about it again? Like, no.
No, but what I find interesting about that is that you would play as yourself and this other person, and you had to try and remember what the other person had in their hand. And it didn't matter which of you won, but your scores were not combined. So, like, you just wanted one of you to win. And it's a real mind trip of being like, I think my other hand is not quite as good, so I'm going to put all my, like, game towards helping the other me. And she's very much played like that. Like, they're 2 individual games with 2 very separate hands, as it is, but they're trying to make just one of them win, even though you can't always see what the other person has. Does that make sense?
No, and
I think it's a mind trip.
It's cool because they have an advantage that is not just having been former players, but being a married couple who share the money. It's just, as we've talked about, so different from being cousins who, like, won't share the money. That's not, like, I don't know if you're allowed. I guess you'd give something, but that's not the same as, like, this is $500,000 for our household, for our mortgage, for whatever it is. And they definitely use that. And they would have thought about it, that it's like, we have this specific thing to us. Not everyone has that. I think it was only Ben and Shay that were another partnership in the whole thing. You know, it's like parents and kids. Like, that's not necessarily how like finances work. So they use that to their advantage, being like, how can we maximize what is truly a double chance in a way it's not really a double chance for anyone else. So they've been thinking about that the whole time, like the way that they use the blood versus water theme and their individual roles in it has been like going back, you know, Mark chooses both, you know, to go to a different swap tribe. Like the whole time it's been like, how can we really innovate with this like very specific theme?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way they've done that has been really clever and really calculated. I think some of the, it feels like sacrifices that Sam has made to propel their, not their collective game, but the chances of one of them winning. It must have been so hard not to react emotionally and be like, this isn't actually the best thing for me. It wasn't the best thing for her to lose calm. Like, I think it was the best thing for one of them. It gave them a much better chance of getting one of them to the end.
Mm.
It was a really, in times hard to watch, but really cleverly done.
I know that it has continued to put people off a little bit in watching that dynamic because Sam so often hasn't got her way and now did some sacrifice. And like I've spoken a lot about it. The Khan thing was like, did make me uncomfortable a little bit or, you know, upset me to a degree. And then from the Jesse thing, I'm like, no, I get it. Like Jesse's brother is going against Sam's husband. This is like untenable. And she talked about how that kind of gap was widening between them. For me, where I don't feel down about it, it's just about the strength that Sam had. Like, other than the Khan thing, which was unfortunate, and I do feel like there was some silent thing to a degree, I do feel like then she took it back so, so hard by taking Jesse's idol. And to me, she's had so much agency all around that moment to the point where she's the one who comes up with this plan. Like, that's the dynamic. It's not Mark saying, like, Sam, soon you will be sacrificed. It's Sam saying, here's this cool, innovative plan that I've come up with. She convinces him to it, and then one of them will be sacrificed. Like, they don't get to decide who that is. I think they probably want it to be Sam from a jury perspective, but he happened to be immune here. They're going to vote out who they're going to vote out. Like, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like, okay, Mark, like, you keep the idols because we're hoping I get voted out. We're drawing votes to me. Like, in episode 9, when they were both vulnerable, it's like, put it in your shoes because whoever comes back is going on for the good of the pair. And here it happens to be Ma.
Yeah.
But the fact that she comes up with the plan to me is just so indicative of her whole game. And, like, okay, maybe some people see that as, like, lacking power or agency. But to me, it's so powerful. Like, damn, like, she came up with that and it's innovative. Like, it's cool. It's new. It's different. And it's hers. And I love that about that.
Yeah, I agree, and I wouldn't take anything away from Sam's agency. And I think that the way the two of them have played the game together has been really excellent. I still just think that this final step was just a little too early to sacrifice one of them. I think the two of them in the game were still a really big advantage and so much more powerful than having two idols with one person. Just that it's that. It's that extra bite of the apple. It's that extra set of eyes and ears. It's that extra person still working the game. And you've still got that extra life in the game. Like, she can still go later. He can still go later. There's a lot of game left still to play to me.
There's pros and cons. I definitely see that. The conversations they were having didn't seem to be like, okay, this round is a sacrifice round. Next round, maybe we don't, like, we have
It was their approach to the game.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, and Sam comes out and she says, like, you roll the dice and sometimes you lose. And she wasn't like, all right, here we go, I'm going now. She was like, no, let's take the chance to keep it all.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, you've taken the chance. And at this point, you know, you've got an ally who's turned around and been like, no, it's time to play it. Like, you're really taking a big chance at that point. And yes, accepting that, if need be, you are going to leap onto the sword because it's for the team. But I just think it was the wrong way up of risks at that point.
Yeah.
It's not the overall concept I disagree with. And I think that they've played a fantastic game. I just think that I would weigh so much more strongly still having Sam still in the game.
It was a very minimal chance that she would stay there. Juicy Dave is out. They know that, like, the, you know, having conversations at tribal council, and, like, obviously, at the very least, probably they're flipping on a revote. Like, they're not going to rocks for you. That feels like a lot. Like, when you had an idol to save yourself and now you would be immune and Mark would be immune. Josh and Chrissy going to rocks for that when you didn't play your own idol. Like, that would actually be unfair to them. So it was a minimal chance at absolute best. I think it's just, we weren't seeing conversations that were like, all right, sacrifice round because we don't really know. I feel pretty good about it, but it's not worth just like being too conservative. Okay, this seems like a more of a sure thing. Let's like use an idol on it. We were seeing words like, no matter what, we're not playing it. But the thing that you know, with the pros and cons, you can agree, disagree. It's definitely like got some merit to the strategy, but the thing that has pained me, what I knew would happen, is just like, you know, obviously there's like a lot of hate for Sam out there, and a lot like, oh, they're so smug and cocky, and it's like, no, they made an active choice. You can disagree with that choice for sure, but like, it wasn't like they got blindsided. It wasn't like they were like, we definitely have this. Like, it wasn't arrogance, obviously. They made definitely a choice to sacrifice. So, and that's cool because it's interesting. So, yeah,
definitely,
yeah, that choice fascinates me.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens going forward as well. I mean, you have to think that Mark's in with a good shot to make it a long way without even throwing immunity wins in there, because I think that he's still a good shot at immunity as well.
Mm-hmm.
He should make it a long way, but it's really hard to see now how the dynamics unfold.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's very broken up now. I think the Alliance game is done. There's like little voting blocks, which we'll definitely talk about. I want to ask, do you, other than the sacrifice plan, she does get voted out here. Like, you know, she didn't quit. Mm. Like, they voted her out. She went and she chose not to save herself, but she didn't choose to go. Mm. They vote her out. Do you put blame on her on anything she's dealing with? You know, as we talked about last week, voted seven people out of the game who got a second chance. Five came back.
Ugh.
Now this twist, which she, you know, saves herself in the first round. Would you put anything on her in this? Like, any fault?
I mean, again, it's complicated because as far as Sam and Mark have a very joint plan, and their plan is still carrying along.
Yeah, it's like, just have a matter they really of whether,
because to me, they haven't lost anything yet. I mean,
well, best case scenario, they make it again, through. They make it through that without using an idol and without Sam going, but there were a lot of dynamics. There were a lot of dynamics and a lot of twists that broke to make that very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, I think we shouldn't minimize the fact that still, whichever one of them, they must each, in their own mind, be wanting to win the game for themselves as well. Like, these are competitive people who have played quite individual games up until the merge, even though I think that they've always been thinking about how does this work for both of us, for one of us to get to the end, which is such a complicated thing to do in your head. So I'm sort of thinking that, you know, as far as Sam's concerned, this is all still a part of the bigger plan for her. She's still playing the game at Jury Villa. Like, it's hard to say, do I put fault on her for, I mean, I think, yes, I wouldn't have made this final decision to take the risk of going home to save the idol at this stage. But other than that, I think that their plan is ongoing, and maybe it's too soon to say if that was right or wrong.
Mm. For me, I feel very, very little I can put on Sam, who had to contend with more production interference than maybe anyone ever.
Yeah, it's
maybe
outrageous.
But I do think, like, I don't think I was as high on her in the first Tribal Council of the Week as other people seem to be. Like, I still think it's amazing. Obviously, like, she uses implicit immunity, doesn't go home when everyone gets sent home in the face of this massive twist as this huge threat. The fact that she even walked back to camp in itself deserves major praise. But I just felt like she was doing a little bit too much in a way that did seem to burn social capital, like, definitely with Josh, which Dave fans the flames of, which I thought was an amazing move by Dave. But
yeah, he deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely talk about Dave. This was easily Dave's best week. But for Sam, firstly, I really don't feel like she was acting like how someone acts when they have an idol. Like, if you have an idol, you have power. Like, you're the person with power in that dynamic. You can just sit there and they can vote for you and it's fine. Like, if you have an idol that you're going to use. Someone who can't play an idol, who doesn't have an idol, who won't play an idol, is, like, desperately running around trying to, like, you know, double deal with you, which is what she was trying to do because she didn't have power, because she didn't have an idol. And to me, that made it really, really clear that she had nothing. I think Mark did amazingly well because you want to be like subtly unsubtle, like, oh no, did you see that? My bad. Like, you want to make it seem like you don't want anyone else to see like that you had something, which is what Mark did brilliantly. I just think she kind of, to me, I don't feel like she took the vote off her. I think they were going in to vote for Jordan because the implicit threat of the idol was enough to keep her safe. Definitely with Mark doing that, that was very, very scary. And if I were them, I would be like, Sam is so nervous, too nervous for someone who's going to play an idol. Sam's actually a free shot. I get them being conservative and not taking the risk on that, but I actually felt like she made it more obvious that you should vote for her. So I thought she was doing, for me, a little bit too much, fighting with Jordy in front of the jury. It, like, especially she's still trying to keep on when Mark might get sacrificed. Like, it was a lot in front of the contestants and the jury to just be doing that much.
Mm. Yeah, if anything, Jordan was behaving like the person with the idol.
Yeah. Jordan was like, well, we'll see how it goes. Like, yeah, it's like, Jordan, no, no. Like, why aren't you desperate? Like, why aren't you running around? Like, you should be scared. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, if anything, they should have been worried that it was him with the idol.
Yeah, why is Jordan so chill right now? It's like, that's just Jordan. Like, that's not what it is.
I mean, I agree. I think it was played quite hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Dave did very well back at camp to redirect this as if it were Sam throwing Jordan under the bus.
When he voted for Jordan, he goes back to Jordan's like cousin. He goes to Josh and is like, I voted your cousin out.
Can you believe that?
But it was Sam. And Josh is like, it was all fair. Like, even at Drury Villa, Jordan seems mad at Sam. It's like, but Juicy Dave is the one who flipped. That is a credit to Juicy Dave.
I wondered if that's because it really behooved Josh. I'm getting all the J names right, I think, which is, it's hard.
Incredible. It, I mean, like, if you have to ask about the J names, is this all Winnipeg?
I mean, it's in Josh's favour to go along with Dave. Like, he wants Dave back on side. So how much him being like,
yeah that's true.
Yeah, well, we don't like Sam, do we? Like, maybe that was just Josh playing well, because I believe that Josh is a good player.
Yeah, but Josh also does flip, and then in his voting confessional is like, and apparently, Sam, you threw Jordan under the bus. So that's why I credit Juicy Dave, because he explicitly said it as he voted, which was wild. Yeah.
Say, as he voted, I'm going to throw Sam under the bus?
No, he said, Sam, I heard you threw Jordan under the bus. And that was like, he said, like, there's some sneaky stuff going on. Not quite sure what it is. It's my spidey senses. Even though I'm Harvey Dent, my spidey senses are tingling about something that you guys have. I don't know what it is. And also you threw Jordan under the bus. So I was like, okay, well, it's Jordy getting to him and Dave. And that's why I credit both of them that, because he explicitly, like, said it in his voting confessional.
Right, Josh did. Yeah. No, I follow. And I thought that was very well done from Dave. I don't know if, like, how... Like, did he really believe that, actually? Was he watching this and thinking that, you know, that Sam had left them no choice but to target Jordan? Was he like, oh, Sam, I have no choice. We have to target Jordan now?
Well, I guess it's not true, because it was self-interested, because she wasn't like, okay, I have this fake idol and who will I use it on? Like, Juicy Dave explicitly says multiple times, like, she just said she was going to play it for herself, which is not something we see, but it's something I could imagine happened, and she definitely was self-interested. It's her prerogative, obviously, to, like, be looking out for herself in this, like, incredibly difficult situation. She doesn't vote against Jordan, which is something she said in the exit, like, she thought about doing in case they split the vote, but she wanted to have that loyalty, but still just kind of, really, I think a very fair amount of self-interest was enough to push Josh, like, in his emotion about the way that that had gone. Which is,
I think it would be very, very fair to have voted for Jordan as Sam.
Yeah, they were fighting for their lives. Like, but that, again, that's a credit to Juicy Dave, that even what she did, like, he fans those flames into being too much. It's an energy from Sam to being, I guess, that self-interested and by doing so much, but for herself.
Yeah, and I think it's too much to ask, you know, having just watched how this played out. But
it's so entitled.
It would have been good. Yeah.
Like, how did you, why did you not save Jordan with your non-idol? Like, it's like, you didn't even have it. Like, I couldn't save either of us. Like, what are you going to do? Like,
No, but I think that what I actually think is too much to ask is of Sam then to go back and say to Josh, like, I did it. I was fighting for my life. It was the worst, you know, we couldn't both walk out of there. It was so hard. Like, I don't know if they had that conversation.
Mm.
Well, I don't know if she
doesn't care about what she went through.
If that were me, it would not have crossed my mind to like defend the fact that I defended myself.
Yeah.
But I think that it's probably she needed to preemptively, you know, be on the defensive there with Josh.
Yeah. No, I also think it was crazy that Josh could even remotely be upset that Sam wasn't doing more to protect Jordan, as Jordan sat there doing very little to protect himself. Like, she doesn't owe him that. She's like, again, like she's doing, she doesn't have even something to protect either of them. That yeah. was a lot to expect. But for me, it's less on that, because I do think, like, I mean, look, it's Josh's prerogative as a player, like perception is reality. That's the perception that he had of her, and that burns her to a degree. For me, what objectively I didn't love as much was just going around with the whispering, but then like fighting vocally with Jordy still, like that kind of thing. I was like, there's some social capital being burned here. It might have been in a different way than we thought it would, but I think like that just general energy possibly comes back in general, even though I do feel like Josh is pretty entitled at that point to think that that's something that she should be worrying about. Yeah, that would just be crazy.
And again, maybe it's just people, you know, are going to believe what suits them at the moment and pick up on the, you know, if we're jumping on the, yeah, like Sam should have definitely done this and is so disloyal because that's the direction that he's heading anyway. That probably makes more sense to me.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of the faults are on the twist. Like, I felt that there's stuff that you can nitpick with, which is, like, for example, you know, when she's talking to KJ and Shay, she's offering them, like, a lot of, like, kind of vague platitudes, which she's done for Jordy before. It's not as specific, but what can she give them? Because she has a majority. Like, I think she really tried to find safety in that majority, which is so fair when you're in a dicey situation as she was. And that safety is, like, the six of us, they didn't even, like, want to split the vote before the twist came in. Like, she obviously knows she has the idols. Like, let's just, like, kind of load up on this minority and not work as concretely with them. Like, I felt that she was a little bit distanced from them, but that's her game. But then when someone gets swung over due to a massive twist, that makes it really difficult. But I don't know that I can put that on her and not on the mechanism she was facing.
Yeah, that was really tricky spot.
It was hard. I mean, I want to do a bit of a eulogy for Sam, which is, you know, player of the season, as I've said, main character. The rest is all going to feel like what comes next, you know, the, you know, 19 years later of the season. Was freaking amazing. Like, she controlled the whole pre-merge. She was always in the swing spot through a pre-swap to a post-swap, through difficult stuff against all the twists. Then she makes like the biggest move of the season with like the longest term multiple lies, also with like the Sandra vote from way back when, wheeling and dealing from like the very beginning. And I honestly think I get it now. Like, having learned more about Mark and Sam, like, I understand. Because in your season, they go early, and there's a lot going on even, like, on Summer Tao, which you should know, you know, a lot going on with you, while they're getting voted out of Asanga. So they become, like, a footnote of that really hectic season. Like, it's a plot line, but there are, like, 50 ridiculous plot lines in that season. So you don't think about it that much. But then you get to know Mark and Sam, and you're like, oh, these are, like, two such accomplished, successful people. And I kind of feel like it must have killed them that went so poorly, because they aren't people who fail at things. Like, they are people who succeed. Yeah. And I can kind of imagine that for years, I mean, she says that they kind of put it aside, but like on some level, and definitely when they got the call, they must have prepped for this like nobody's business. Like, they came in here prepared. And the way that they approached the auction, as an example, is the way they approached every second of this game. And the way I'm saying approach, my Mark's still in the game. But like, Sam, if I had known that this was the kind of person she was, if I'd maybe remembered more from your season and known more about her, like, I would have made her my winner pick, because like that tenacity, I think in hindsight, and Amy Chan said it on our preview podcast, and she was so right. Like, all the ingredients were there. Like, I get it. And it played out in that way. And it's really clear to me, and actually not at all shocking in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm just talking about Sam, I guess, but it's always in the context of Mark and Sam, because their stories are so intertwined in every way. Really understood the game this way, this time around. I think, yeah, exactly what you just said, she always had the ingredients. But I don't know that, you know, I remember her coming out of our season and obviously, like, totally self-obsessed and mostly hearing things that relate to myself. But I do remember her being like, I'm used to being in a team where people support each other, and I wasn't ready for the fact that even in an alliance, we're not really supporting each other. Everyone is still looking out for themselves. And I feel like through this season, you really saw her think, what's in that person's best interest and how am I going to pitch to that? Like, she wasn't assuming that anyone was on her side. She was just always moving through the game and using what was in other people's best interest. And I thought that was a real, like, change in how she played, but still used all those tools that are so much a part of her being such a, you know, tenacious and strong woman.
Mm, no, I mean, look, she was amazing. I think all those things are really insightful into her game. And for someone who was the second boot out of her tribe and Mark was third, and a lot of that earlier Sangha stuff, all of it was about kind of coming out against them. They were much, much, much better players than that. And that's what must have hurt them, is like it having gone that way when they had so much more to give. And then they have given it and continue to give it for Mark. But for Sam,
I think they learned. They learned. They evolved and they learned.
Yeah.
And it really showed the second time around. So I think these are people that succeed, and it must have been hard to not get a real foothold in that their first go around. But I think they're different people this time to what they would have been if that game had continued.
Mm, I think that they knew that they had the potential, though. Like, they knew they had the room to
grow. They have a baby now. And I don't know, like, having a baby is such a, like, life-changing, formative experience. Like, they're at a different life stage now to what they were in 2017. These are different people to the people who were in Samoa.
Mm. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, because I was like, I watched, like, clips and stuff. I'm like, I should have just watched, like, those first 8 episodes. Like, was I missing it to be like, they were obviously going to be so great? But I do think that they have evolved. Because had they been this good in Samoa, it wouldn't have gone the way that it did. That's the point. It couldn't have, because they've dominated that whole, you know, this whole season. So even with your incredible cast as competition, like, it couldn't have gone that poorly if they were playing like this in 2017.
I think the game has changed since we played, but I think they've changed more.
Mm. Yeah.
And I didn't play with them, so, like, just from a viewer, and it's hard to be a viewer of your own season and be objective, but to me, they're different people to who they were, while they obviously, you know, retain all the things that made them so attractive as players to begin with.
Yeah, now they're like cutthroat, like killer survivor robots who, like, came, like, ready on every level to, like, take the season on, which I truly feel is, like, how they came out to play it. So, yeah.
And the first time they were just, like, human beings falling in love.
And now they're not human. Now they're survivor robots. Mm. And that's what they did.
They completed their evolution, exactly.
Exactly, as it should. Shall we all one day become survivor robots who are made to play the
game?
We
can only hope.
Exactly. Well, yeah, so I think she did amazingly well. Let's talk about this move from the other perspective, which is KJ and the advantage. We talked about how she got it and maybe the question marks around her getting it in that way. But there were a lot of decisions that went into her playing it this way. Like, what did you think about the way that she actually played the advantage?
I thought it was perfect. I mean, I think the two clear choices are to play it defensively. So to send
Geordie called them the Purga 3, but people are also calling them the Purga Trio, which is also great. I'm a little, like, ooh. I don't know. We're going to have to come up with a consensus.
Trio actually rolls off the tongue a little better.
I think Purga 3.
But Purga 3 does sound cooler. Anyway, whatever. Those
and three. Then when Dave's in, I call them the Purga 4. So, yeah.
Oh.
I have to do it.
Yeah. So obviously you could defensively send the Purga Trio to camp, but that gives the majority the opportunity to do, you know, to take their own control over things. Presumably send Dave out, and one of the best things I think KJ did was to say when she kept David behind, because otherwise you were going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was nice. To play offensively to keep their three numbers, to hopefully flip David over, or at worst take a chance at rocks, because if this doesn't work here, it's not going to work ever. So they might as well go to rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also agree. I love with her calling it out to David by being like, well, we don't think you'd be here, which it shows A, that's how much on the bottom we perceive you as, and B, we've taken this risk for you because we really want to work with you. So I loved her vocalizing that. That was one of my favorite parts of the move. I think the reason you can't play it defensively is because how clearly Dave is on the bottom. Like, they say it's a 6, but it's really a 5. Like, Dave seemed to be on the block last week until Tribal Council, and they found out more people were coming back from Purgatory, and Michelle went instead. Like, he was a real option. He voted against Mark last week. Like, he's never vocalized really as part of the group. So if that's more murky, then maybe, yeah, let's see them kind of tear each other apart and have to make hard decisions. But Dave wouldn't have been a hard decision. So you can't leave them there with that easy thing to, like, pick off the hierarchy. They've come back as a five. They haven't split at all. They haven't flashed any idols. And they're more angry at you because you made them go through that. Now they're definitely the top five. You just helped them kind of make that move a little earlier of picking Dave off, if that's what they were going to do. And now they're coming, like, for complete vengeance and blood. So you can't do that.
Who is, and they would lose David, who is probably
You lose David. That's true.
Moving forward. So I think that what you did was perfect. It's hard to see a lot of, like, another real option.
I'm gonna throw them out to you because this is what so, like, George, for example, and on Talking Tribal, he's talking about it since, like, he's thinking, do you wait? Geordie goes. You've lost Geordie.
Oh, could she use it another time?
Yeah, so then the next two. So if you wait, then you can send yourself, Shay, and David out. And then the five have to crack at eight. What about that as a thought?
So if they have to crack at eight and you've got three, I mean, what probably happens then is that the two Jays and Chrissy gang up on Mark and Sam, right?
I think so. And then also they're taking a swing at the idol. They probably lose that. I mean, like, if, you know, conventional wisdom thinks they'd play an idol, we know that they probably wouldn't. But you think that, like, you know, they would, so the Jays are going to lose. Yeah, it's
complicated because then you lose a J.
This is your winner pick. You're calling him a J. That's what I'm saying. Like,
you already lost a J, but then who would you lose?
You don't want to lose a J.
You probably lost Geordie and a J, right? So then you're like,
you've lost all the J's. It's just a J massacre. Jessica. All week. Just J's flying everywhere.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that, like, why leave it later? I feel like you're just losing options by leaving it later, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think to lose
Geordie, I'd rather do it now.
Yeah, Geordie, who has been, like, a person that people don't really want to work with because he's threatening, so maybe that keeps people from you, but is someone who, as we see, can kind of get people to your side. I don't think that you want to lose that option. If you bring yourself, Shay, and Dave back, you don't even know that Dave is with you. There's every chance he just, like, goes on to one of the other sides. And then I think why I wouldn't like that plan is that you've just emboldened the side that won, and if they choose to work with you, great, but you don't have control. Like, one of those sides will win, and then, like, there'll be kind of numbers flying everywhere. Like, it breaks it up and it forces them to turn against each other, but not in a way that you can, like, pull people over like they do with Dave, and which Dave eventually does with Josh to make this work. Like, this move had risk of rocks, where they could have gone home if Sam doesn't play the idol. 50% someone on their side goes home. If Sam does play the idol, even more chance, 66% that it's just Dave, Shay, and KJ putting their hands in a bag. So there's risk there, but if you can pull it off, I think that's what was important about this move, which they did, and that's a credit to them. If you can read it well, and you know Dave's going to flip, and you feel good about those numbers, and you're going to stay so strong, and they came back from that tribal council, and they consolidated. They were like, this is our group. If you feel like you can kind of stick with that, I think this is the move. Even though there's risk involved in it, make it work, and this is your best long-term plan.
I'm trying to think, I mean, because from KJ's perspective as well, she needs to be thinking about who, not only who can get her to the end, but who she can beat. And you've got to think that she's looking at like, Shay as someone that she wants to go to the end with, but not Geordie, right?
Yeah, everyone, you're probably thinking, like, Geordie, a Dave or a Chrissy.
Like, a Shay and David.
Yeah.
So how can she get the three of them to the end with this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think Geordie was probably quite popular.
Yeah. But what you've said has actually made me think of something else, which is this. From a jury perspective, if you've made it work for KJ, this is the move. Like, ballsy, brave, like, did it. Rather than next time, if you send yourself back, you're like, even if there's strategy to it and it buys you some time, you look like kind of leaving with your tail between your legs. So, like, this way you make it work in front of the jury, and they pulled that off and the jury watched it. So to go back and be like, you guys work it out amongst yourselves, and then they do, Mark and Sam do win that vote, or the Jays do win that vote, then they get the credit for that. That's not, and, like, KJ, I think, needs resume points. So this is definitely a big, and, like, at this point, you've come back from purgatory, you have to play to win, you have to play big, like, even with risks, like, surely you take the second chance where you're going to play big and actually do the most for an actual winning game, rather than just, like, buying time or, you know, trying to kind of find little cracks. Like, let's kind of make some noise. And I think that's what she did.
Yeah, I think so too. It was interesting, because the start of the second episode, and someone was like, oh, nice to see she's here to play finally. And I liked that KJ was like, I've been here. I've been
playing. I voted out my sister. Stuff. Hello. Like, I've been doing this for my entire
sister.
Yeah. Like, you know, if this was US Survivor, Jeff Probst would still be talking about it. But because it was the second time that we someone had voted out a family member, we barely even bring it up. Like, are you joking? I've been doing things.
I think she has been doing things, though. I mean, she has been very relaxed about being offered up as the split vote, which is frustrating to watch. But it's clearly left her with a lot of options and a lot of people who are still willing to play the game with her. A lot of people who don't mind throwing her name out, which would never be a position I would be comfortable with, but also always seem to think that she will be an option, which is a good place to be, really.
Mm. It's a very unique way of playing the game, but I think it has been passive in its own way, purposely offering herself up, which I think is interesting. Did get her voted out once accidentally. She's come back, but I think you need the big play. And this was that play. And to do it in like such a bold way and win, like even the way that the Jordy was like, she's on fire and she had one liners and she's talking about being a mother and she's translucent and she's got tea and pour the tea. And like, you know, like, okay, these are the sound bites that Australian Survivor wants. Like, that's what you need. It needs to be noisy. And she made a lot of noise. A couple of other things about this vote. We got this a lot on this question. It's like, why didn't they split to possibly take Sam out, take an idol out?
Do they mean why didn't Jordy, KJ, and Shay and David split?
Oh my god, I love your reaction so much because I would not.
No, that's so silly.
Right? Okay. Right. So like, I haven't even like thought at all that was even a possibility. And then it was such a major talking point, and I was like, am I so out of touch, or like, is the fandom wrong? You know, like, well, I wouldn't have even considered that. But I think like a lot of people in the fandom, this was like the biggest talking point to come out of that episode. And it was like, there's 4-2, look at the numbers, check the Wikipedia page, they can split, why didn't they? And for me, I was like, I'm really not on board with this take. Yeah, like, so
and if you're David and not sure if you were going to split if you were going to flip, and now you know they're splitting,
you just 3-2-1 them out of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they don't need to tell David that they're splitting, although I will say that that's not a great way to make a long-term ally. Like, yeah, we're all piling on Jordan. Are we actually voted out Sam? Yeah, like, you were complicit into something you didn't want to do.
Even then, once we're 2-2-2 and Sam has or hasn't played her idol, David can still choose, can't he, between...
Yeah, that's true. So then at that point, the only people... At that point, the only people... Yeah, at that point, so if Sam doesn't play her idol, then it's Dave, KJ, and Shay voting, so they do win on that way. If Sam does play her idol, then they're choosing between Jordy and Jordan on Shay, KJ, David, and Sam. So he probably is snookered into that, but is snookering someone into a move the way to win an ally? I think not.
No, I don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
I agree. It's also like, I think what it is it's like, to me, that take, firstly, it's results-oriented because it went well. In another world where they do split and then they 3-2-1 themselves out of the game because Dave wasn't with them, they called the dumbest idiots on the planet for wasting this golden opportunity. So I think it's results-oriented. I also think it's like a mistake you can make in analysis, which is like Survivor's chess. They had 4-2, split it. That's how you do a 4-2 vote when someone has an idol, 2-2-2, right? But like, it's more about put yourself in their position. You're pulling Dave over at tribal council. You've had the shock factor. You cannot trust in that. And if you're wrong, you 3-2-1 yourself out of the game. You've lost your opportunity to, at worst, go to rocks or go to a revote where Dave might be scared enough to flip at that point, or even Sam might be scared enough to flip at that point. Like, you have lost a golden opportunity. Like, I agree. I can't even entertain the split argument.
And I mean, they're so unsure about where David sits. Even in the next episode, everyone still thinks, is David with them or not? Mm-hmm. Like, they're clearly very unsure about where David stands.
Yes, he is someone who voted 2 of you to purgatory, who hasn't flipped at multiple opportunities to flip, who you're dragging over at this tribal council. And then we got like the take, well then tell him before so that you can work out the plan. It's like, but there's no trust in Dave.
No.
So if Dave goes.
And then they lose both the backup and the threat of rocks, I think.
Like, yeah.
You know, in a way, rocks is their fallback plan. You know, worst case, we're going to.
Yeah. I mean,
worst case, Sam plays a rival, but otherwise we're going to rocks. And that's the thing that I think pushes David to flip with them anyway.
Yeah, like, so to give Dave the opportunity to go to the majority and be like, this thing is happening, here's how we can prepare, or you guys prepare, I think we'll talk about it, but that actually could have had some pretty dire consequences. So I think the KJ needs a shock factor, as we'll talk about. I think as well, when you are this minority group who has nothing to lose, that threat of rocks, that's what's scary. It's like, we don't care. We already got voted out. We'll go to rocks if we need to. Just try us. And like that fear of being like the tightest group, even as a small group who just has nothing to lose. Like it's something that they really try to do in All Stars as well. It's like when they came back from exile, Brooke and Shawnee and AK try to be like, and the majority were scared and they put in a lot of pressure for that not to happen. So it's like, just try us. We'll do it. And they have to be able to be so united. Like, they cannot crack from that, even if it is as part of a split vote. Like, not even just, like, actually separating from each other. Like, they have to be the strongest three, and all you know is three votes are going on Jordan, and you can be assured of that, and at worst, you're giving yourself rocks. And I think that they have to go with that.
Yeah. It's actually one of the good things, I suppose, that's come out of the non-earn week. There's a lot of people playing with house money, and I'd include Mark and Sam in that in a way because they were willing for one of them to be voted out. So they're always playing with that. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of emboldened them to play with bigger risk. And the same with the Purgatory, like they are clearly happier to play with bigger risk at this stage because they've already lost everything.
Yeah, and this was the riskiest play. Why I say that the shock factor was imperative is because I asked Jordan, we got this question on Twitter, I asked Jordan, could Josh have given you immunity before he left? And Jordan seemed to indicate that he could.
What?
So that is fascinating to me.
No, that he could give up the immunity necklace?
Well, Josh at any point can give Jordan the immunity necklace. Like, what if he says to JLP, like, well, wait, we just got sent out at a random time in tribal. Like, can't I give – I was planning on giving him the necklace tonight.
Your trapdoor thing, Shannon, I've heard you talk about it before, and is very relevant here. But it's often relevant.
People should be trapdoored often. Agreed.
I think once you are ejected from tribal council, once that's like, boom, the gavel's down, you can't be active again until you're back in the game.
I agree with you, but I think that this then should have come at... Well, like when I don't even know, they never even do it anymore. Like it's before you go to vote. It's like, would you like to give immunity to anyone? We never even hear that, but that's where that is. That should be us. And then KJ should have to play it because it's unfair if like Josh has lost an opportunity where he technically maybe was going to do it anyway, which he obviously wasn't. So I think for the purity of the game, I'm glad that he didn't, but yeah, the order of operations. Again, I feel like, tricky.
Yes, the order of operations. But I think that if he was going to give it away, he should have had to give it away before KJ decided who was staying and going. I don't think you can do that after because I think once she's put that into place, the people who have been sent away are inactive. They're out. Like, yeah, they're still playing on the beach or whatever. But I'm sure they're not. They're probably waiting for the minivan or whatever. Not allowed to talk. So, they're not allowed to talk. They're inactive. To me, you can no longer pass something in that moment.
Yeah, well, Mark passed his scarf, but...
Yeah. When he should have been essentially... inactive.
Yeah.
That's a super gray zone. Like, can you pretend to do something at the time? And maybe someone else can be like, no, you were inactive then. You couldn't have done that.
I think what ideally should have to happen is that KJ should have to write who the three are that she's sending out. And then JLP should say, before I read this, would anyone like to do anything with their advantages, and then Josh has to make the decision. Do you just want to like make sure you're safe, or do you want to give it to Jordan, who you feel maybe she would choose more, or something like that? Like, there's an interesting decision in that, and then it's like reread it out. Which he wasn't given that opportunity, but I do agree him giving it over would have felt like such an unfair thing because he obviously chooses Jordan for being vulnerable. Like, otherwise, they probably choose Josh, right?
It's just such an undermining of the decision. I don't like things that undermine a decision that was made consciously.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it didn't happen.
Don't change the rules once a decision was made.
Jordan seems to think he could have and, like, seems to lament it. So that's an interesting thing. Do you think, assuming, say, Mark wins immunity, Jordan and Josh are still available, do you think they would have chosen Josh instead of Jordan? And do you think that would have been better or worse for them?
I think they definitely would have targeted Josh.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a much bigger threat to get out of the game. And would it have been better or worse for Jordy, KJ and Shay? I mean, the trouble with leaving Jordan behind is I think he would more passively sit still with Mark and Sam. I don't think he would have come over to them the way that Josh did.
But they also need him as that passive target because they don't want to vote for Sam. They need to pull over Dave. They're trying to flush the idol. Like they don't even bring over more kind of vulnerable targets. Like if they were worried that an immunity necklace can get passed over, there's a chance that maybe they should like keep Chrissy instead of Sam. But they're clearly trying to also flush the idol if they can just through that like panic and paranoia. So then Jordan becomes like the passive target. I think they would have taken the shot at Josh because he's like clearly the alpha. But I think that like there is the chance that Josh can wield a little more power and start dealing. And he's not necessarily just sitting there as much. Like he might command more power. But I don't know how much he could have done. Like if you're such a strong three, or is he saying to Dave, like, Dave, if you ride with this on us, like, you know, go, well, I'll take you to top three. Like is he in Dave's other ear then trying to pull Dave back over in a way Jordan wasn't? I don't know if he could have got it done, but I bet he would have tried a little more and that might have been worse for them. But then again, I think they would have done it because it's again about the risk. Like it's a riskier play against a harder opponent, but it's a bigger get. So I think they would have done it, but it would have been an uphill battle for them.
I don't really know what, again, because we haven't seen enough of Josh to know what his relationships were like with, say, KJ and Shay.
Well, we know he votes for KJ once per every couple episodes.
Erratically.
Yeah.
It's probably not that good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think he's probably, if he were available, I think they would have kept him as a target. But it probably was not the right move. I think that in the end they needed Josh for the next round.
That's true.
And you're right that he would have been a lot less passive and he could have been a lot he could have done something, which Jordan did not.
Well, maybe they don't keep him there for that reason. Like, maybe it's not just the immunity, because we do see Jordy especially really trying to work with him long term. Like, he's been trying, and he's been now somewhat succeeding. What did you think about Jordy in this episode? Because we've been saying for a long time, like, admire the vigor, admire the spirit from Jordy, but, like, nothing's really working, but he's trying his damnedest. And it worked this week with the Purga 3 had success. And even though KJ's move was absolutely not his and he kind of like is like, well, I lit a fire under a butt. I'm like, Jordy, no, that was KJ's. But I do think that like from a general standpoint, he is the ringleader. Like he has galvanized this minority. He's working that hard. Like the auction is again indicative of how he's approached this whole game. And I do think that you have to give credit to not just like the Josh flip, but also just how hard he has pushed this in like his energy. That must be really tiring.
And things that I have really liked from Jordy, I like it that, and he said it a few times, that he's willing to put himself on the line. You know, he says to the group, they're going to vote for me and I'm going to take that risk. You know, I'm happy to take that risk for us. I think that's very good for him if he can make it to the end. And the other thing I like about him that I feel like he is doing really consciously, he's really aware of narrative and he talks a lot about like, you know, there's this narrative that's been playing out and I want to change that and shape it, and talks to other players about it as well, about like the story that's unfolding. And I think he's a really good storyteller. And at the moment he's coming off as this like underdog battler that's willing to put himself on the line. And it's not a hard story to tell and he's telling it super well. He's making the absolute most out of it. So I'm a big Jordy fan.
You want to vote for it at the end. You want to root for it. This is someone who's calling himself the Joker and everyone's like, you're Batman. And he's like, no, I'm the villain. And they're like, we love you, Jordy. Like, he wants to be the villain. He can't even be the villain.
Guys, stop it.
Yeah. So,
I'm a baddie.
Yeah, I don't want to be good. It's like, you're the best. Like, no, I'm not. I'm Joker. I'm mean. And I have that one catchphrase. Like, why don't you, like, he's never asking people how he got these scars. It's always the same, like, here we go. But anyway, he had it in his head he wanted to be the Joker. The first thing on that is that they had to have known. I've said it before. But, like, man, the, like, ongoing Batman references, like, did they know that it was going to be cross-marketing with, like, the biggest movie in cinema? It's just crazy to me. Josh being Harvey Dent and then doing the Two-Face move is brilliant. Like, just, like, a long Batman allegory now. Like, I don't know how that happened.
I still haven't seen Batman.
Well, spoilers from this entire season of... Nah, it's more of a Dark Knight. More of a Dark Knight. Joker's not, like, a main part of the current
I haven't
movie.
Seen the end of the season yet, so...
Haven't seen
it either.
Yeah.
I like what Georgie was doing.
Yeah. Well, I also really like that he makes himself the bait over and over again because it robs Sam of her implicit immunity. Not at that vote where they were the six because they needed to win that. Then, like, so it wasn't worth taking the risk. Like, they have to vote for Jordan just in case, you know, they can't have that go poorly. They need to come back with four on that. Like, that's the win for them. So not on that. But in every other interaction, he's always willing to be the bait. And Sam keeps saying, like, well, they won't vote for me because they think I have an idol. It's like, well, they will, because if you play the idol, Jordy will just go home and they're all happy for that to happen anyway. And he's willing to put himself in that position. So it robs her of her implicit immunity a lot of the time. The 4-4-1 split, really salient, can just put, like, Dave and the Purgatory on to Sam, so you can, like, cover bases there, and then if she doesn't play the idol, it's just a straight shot out. It's a really good plan, and it kind of reminds me of Adam in Cook Islands going to Aishu and being like, you has a god idol, I'm going anyway, just vote for him and I'll be the offshoot votes and I'll go home, and then you flush the idol and I'm going to be a juror, so you might as well. And they don't. And it's that same thing where with Jordy, it's like, why not? The only one risking anything is me. So you might as well make a move. And they still weren't going to. But I think it's a really, really good effort. And I think it makes a lot of sense as well to be like, I'm going to be a juror wondering why you didn't make a play when the bait was right here and it was me.
Yeah. I think the way he talks to the people who are going to be on the jury is quite, you know, he's always just, sorry, guys, I'm just having a whack at it. Like,
have a crack.
It's not personal. Yeah. You're all great. Like, he's really, yeah, that's right. Have a crack, guys. Have a crack.
Have a whack.
He's really, different. He's on tune. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like it's quite conscious. And it's definitely been consistent, at least, isn't it?
Yeah. I like it. I think he's doing a lot. I think him putting in that work with Josh over and over again has finally paid off. And I do credit it, as much as we'll talk about Dave. And there's so much intentionality there. He's like, okay, Josh is really upset. I've also lost a loved one. I know what it's like to come back and your loved one's been voted out. Mm-hmm. Let me use that vulnerability. Like, he explains everything because he gets 18 confessionals an episode to explain it to us. But he does he does explain it to us with that intentionality. So I like that. In terms of Dave, we've alluded to the fact that Juicy Dave, you know, kind of owned the Juicy tagline this week. He was his best week. He was actually doing some pretty good stuff. And I know that, like, I make it sound so bad. Like, I think even on Twitter, whenever you put actually before, like, he did well. He actually did well. Like, it really undercuts. Juicy. They called him Judas. I'm calling him Juicy Dis. Oh, yeah. Juicy Judas, another Instagram handle we should be sitting on for Juicy Judas Dave. But Dave, it's actually hilarious to me how much of this is hinged. The entire post-merge, really. It's like really hinged on Juicy Dave. And it's tragic, but it's also kind of funny.
I wonder how it must be strange for Brianna to be watching this, because it often feels like Dave was, you know, Brianna's dad who, like, was there to drop Brianna off and somehow found himself like, am I I'm doing this too, am I? Like, he's just sort of been carried along. He's like, is Brianna not here anymore?
Exactly. But this whole season has relied on him.
Exactly. He's been so critical to these later votes.
He literally was Brianna's ride.
Brianna.
And now he has been the person who has structured and decided the entirety of the post-merge. And that's why you cast people you want on the show should be. Well, that's, but, like, in saying that, like, it has been, it is hilarious to me. Juicy Dave was also funny this week. Like, there's something about, like, how, I don't know, he delivers things in kind of like a droll way where he's like, Josh called me Judas, which is fair enough. Like, okay.
I have enjoyed his, like, he just always seems a bit bemused to, like, find himself here. Although he did say he had, like, a real sassy comeback. I think it was to Mark when, Mark was like, there's going to be consequences for this. And he was like, for you. Sassy comeback. I really enjoyed that.
No, that whole scene was, he was like, you know what, Josh, sometimes you have to make a move. It's like, Dave, You actually numerically used every opportunity you had to make a move. You got cornered into this position. You literally sent them all to purgatory. They came back. You still only would have had a 4 of 9. They had the most overpowered advantage, which then put you into this position. But now you're like, sometimes you got to make a move. Not every time before this, but at this one. But look.
Shannon, he's learning on the fly. He didn't expect to be here.
He was dropping Brown. I love that. That's what it was. And now he is the last OG blood left.
Really?
Yeah.
He's the last of his tribe.
That's nuts. He was the first one voted out. And he's the last one.
You know what is quite funny?
Yeah.
It's the Sam and Dave story. You kind of forget that that they had that friction right at the start. They were tight allies, and then he did his whole juicy thing. And and then it's Dave. It's Dave again.
He's here.
Crazy.
So
you see Sam being like, it's Dave. Dave's not with us. And think, oh my gosh, it's been weeks that Sam has been trying to raid Dave.
I know, of all the people, the last two bloods left, when they were the ones in that first tribe who had that like whole interaction where she had a live tribal, like try to get him voted out. And that's been the only good idol play, the only idol play that's worked all season. So Dave's doing some stuff, you know, and actually some of it was good this week, as we're saying, like, the way that he threw Sam under the bus.
Yeah.
It really was impressive because he goes to Josh, who is so upset, as the sole reason, the squeaky wheel who's the reason his cousin went home, and not only convinces him back and pushes on to Sam, but as the person he should be maddest at is actually the person, he's bringing him across. I'm like, how are you doing this right now?
Yeah. When I was watching it, I really was so impressed with Dave. I was like, oh, this is... like, again, always a turn of surprise.
Absolutely.
But now that I am sitting here calmly thinking about the numbers, I am wondering how much of it for Josh was just like, it was no longer in his interest to be mad at Dave. And it was the time for him to go with the tides against Sam and Mark. Because I'm not sure what other option Josh had other than to... I mean, I guess because he's confused matters by asking Mark to play the idol, but to me, he doesn't want to end up with Mark and Sam. He wants to end up with Chrissy and someone else, probably Dave.
Jordan. Well, what would have been Jordan? Yeah. So his options are limited.
At 8.
Yeah.
At 8, I feel like he doesn't want to continue with Mark and Sam anymore.
Well,
I feel like that's why he is so on board with Dave's, like, it was totally Sam.
Yes. I mean, I want to talk about this from Josh because there's two moves here because it's two-faced. And we need to talk about both of them because they're both big moves. And them together is just freaking massive.
Very confusing.
Like Josh is a pilot. This is what it's like. It's like you're on a flight and you're on a commercial airline flight. Josh is your pilot. And for 14 hours of the 17-hour flight, flying steady, no turbulence, randomly, Josh is like, nosedive, or like, let's do a flip. Like, that's literally what the last 5 minutes were for Josh as a pilot. So let's talk about the first part of that, is that he flips on Sam and Mark at what is a 4-4, kind of limited in that way. And you think that that is the optimal move for him, so let's not really give as much credit to the people pulling him across because he's jumping across because it's sensical.
I think so, yeah, except for that he wanted... He obviously wanted them to play the idol. Again, there's been a lot of confusion about flushing the idols.
He's like, do you want to flush the idol or vote for Sam? It's like, oh, this two things not the same thing. At this point, like, who else are we voting for? Like, that's one of the
I was so confused by that conversation because it happened for a while and then I thought it must have been Chrissy who voted for Sam until I saw the voting booth. Like, it was... Because what's Chrissy's role in all of this? She's very tight with Josh. She was in all those conversations. She was relaying conversations between Josh and the Purgatory and David. The Purgatory.
Thank you.
It's so confusing.
Chrissy, in her extended voting confessional, votes for Geordie but is like, I think there's another plan. So
wasn't she the one who was relaying the plan back to Josh?
I don't even know. I mean, she was the one trying to convince Josh to flip earlier. Then they do the opposite of those things. We'll talk about flipping for Chrissy. For Josh, I think it also matters that Jordan's gone. So the couple needed that kind of shield protection. Mm, he doesn't anymore.
Definitely. So, with Jordan there, I got why they were sticking with Mark and Sam. But once
he's lost
Jordan
some power,
is gone,
yeah.
I don't see him sticking with Mark and Sam. To me, he wants Mark or Sam gone.
Well, I mean, he tells him to play the idol. I think it's so you've got a couple with at least one idol, maybe two, but you're a couple, so it's balancing. K, they're very, very threatening, but they're also a shield to the fact that we're threatening. Now that he's less threatening and he's lost Jordan, he's lost power, and now their power really is a lot compared to him, and now he's trying to dent that, to Harvey dent that in some way. So I get now flipping on them. And I think Jordan going is a big catalyst for that, because that changes where he sits in the tribe. It wasn't, even if it isn't necessarily their fault, although he seems to blame Sam in some way, just the way that that positions him, just needing kind of different things from the game and needing to now lower other people's threat levels rather than use people as shields. Like, I think that definitely factors into his estimations.
And besides which, I think he saw the final three as being him, Jordan, and Chrissy.
Yeah.
And without Jordan there, he doesn't want to put Mark or Sam in that spot.
Yeah.
So he needs someone else.
Yeah, so I think it's a hard position for him because he is up against at least the Purgus 3 who are tight with Dave, who's a 4. Like, he's probably coming back now to a minority, although I do think it'll be voting blocks and not, like, you know, a sure majority. But I think, you know, he's got stuff there. He can win immunity. He's got other shields. He's kind of working with Geordi. It is voting blocks. It's going to be dynamic. You've taken out some sort of threat, either in, like, Sam or her idol or what, you know, could have been Sam. I don't have a problem with the flip, even though I think it's always a little scary to kind of flip and to vote out allies and to lose numbers, but I definitely see the merit based on the way he sits in the tribe now. My issue is with the double play. Like, it was so interesting to me for the calm, cool, collected pilot to do the flip, but, and at first I was like, that's interesting, because I was like, oh, okay, like, you just worked against every single person on the tribe in the space of two moves in the space of 1 minute. But the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. Because I was like, wait, no, you just worked against every single person in the space of two moves in the space of 1 minute. Like, what are you coming back to? Like, you're still a huge threat, even just you. It's just singles now, which is, you know, well, he wanted Sam to be there. But even so, like, you've weakened them to some degree. Your threat level will always be there. Like, you're always going to be some kind of tall poppy that needs to be taken down. And even if you come back with Mark and Sam, you voted against them. You know, their confusion must have been like, well, either you or Chrissy voted against us. Which one is it? Like, what are you talking about? So you voted against them. And you also, like, you know, worked with and voted with the other side, but then made sure they lost that vote by trying to tell Sam to play the idol. So, like, the double play for me, when you come back with no one on side and you're still a threat, that I couldn't get on board with. Flipping and having some options and some relationship with Geordi and like, you know, something that you can try and make work, that I see. But, man, coming back to this now, that was a divisive play.
Yeah, you're right. The flip I get, that telling them to play the idol was weird. And I wondered if it was sort of, he'd been stuck actually for a couple of TV weeks anyway, when Jordan was there saying they'd be much happier playing with Mark and Sam if they didn't have the idol. Like, they wanted to keep playing with them, but they wanted them to play the idol. And I wonder if he was just sort of still on that mindset of like, I'll keep playing with you guys, but not when you've got this idol. Like,
yeah.
Ideally, we vote out Geordi and you lose your idol and then we carry forward together.
Yeah, no, that's 100% what he wants. It's like, here's what I need. It's like, I need.
But that would make sense though.
Yeah.
If they follow through and Sam plays her idol, they never need to know that Josh voted against them, because they're going to get to, like, they're not even going to count all the votes, right? His vote's not going to come out.
If Sam plays the idol, they will nullify every vote against her. Like, they will read every vote.
Yeah, so they'll read every vote? No.
Yeah, they'll read every vote. They'll read every single vote.
Because there's going to be,
there'll be five, and it will be his.
Like, yeah,
if you want Sam to stay and you want the idol to be flushed, you can't vote against her. Again, it's a 4-4, so it's hard. And you have to just hope that on the 4-4 she plays her idol. And then your 4 is 1.
So, because otherwise it feels like his only reason for voting Sam then was to protect against rocks. Right? That's all. He's not really trying to flip.
He's trying to flush the idol, which you put a majority on, which makes sense. Like, I think that what he wants, and you can see it in the distance, is like, I want Sam to stay, but the idol to go. And it's like, if you see that
thing, he's not actively flipping.
Well, he's not, because he tells her to play the idol, but he knows that she can still go. Yeah. Like, if she doesn't play it for herself, then she's out. So he's at least putting her at extreme risk. So Mark can't be like, that was fine. Like, it was his vote that sent her out, or at least try to burn an idol. I just feel like if you see that goal that you need, and you're trying to work or work away around some hurdles to get to it, like, what he did was he just, like, drove through or flew through all the hurdles to get to where he needed to be. Like, if that was how it worked, and you come back with Sam and Mark, like, you got your objective, but you also burned every relationship in the game you had to do it. Like, that to me is, like, it's really aggressive, and maybe this far in you kind of need to be aggressive, but, like, super antisocial, a lot when you're already a threat. And if that's his objective, and which it is, he wants Sam and Mark to come back less protected. He keeps saying, we'd just have a better working relationship if they came back without the idol. So that's what you want. But I don't think you can go about it this way to do it, because you've come back with Sam and Mark and they don't have the idol. Say it worked. Your working relationship now may be better because they don't have the idol. It's also much worse because you voted against them. So it's not like the even playing field that you wanted it to be.
Yeah, no. And I also don't like for him that he thinks he should keep playing with Mark and Sam.
Yeah. I think it's that fear of not being in the majority.
Yeah, I think he should be trusting in his positioning in his social game and his ability to talk people around, which I actually think is a lot better than many of the others still left in the game, other than maybe Jordy.
See, I like flipping and then trusting in your relationships with other voting blocks and the other deals that you can make and that you've been offered. I like that. But as you're saying, he didn't even really flip. Like, he flipped and then flipped back. So that's not that actually wasn't really the move. And the move of telling Sam about the idol and staying with her and trying to protect her, but doing it in this really divisive way, like, that was the move. So I'm actually lower and on, also, like, the first half of the move, because he didn't even really hugely make that move. Like, he immediately went back on it. Yeah.
And he didn't vote with Chrissy either, which feels problematic.
Yeah, that's like his person in the game at this point.
And I just think Chrissy has been nothing but loyal to Josh.
Yeah.
And now Josh has not told her about something so important.
I think that you can maybe blame some of that on the confusion. But I think we often talk about, like, inconsistent strategies and people kind of changing it up and, you know, kind of maybe why that, like, doom someone like Croc and, like, he did it in the space of 1 minute. Like, how can we back this? Like, this, that was so ballsy.
Out of character.
I also think another myth, and I do think Josh has played really, really well this season. And I think, you know, we often don't see kind of how much he's been doing, probably in keeping what has been a boring, stable alliance together, because it's annoying to us. But, like, well done to him on that. But he also, like, not believing about the idol for so long, and, like, maybe now with some cues from the jury, but, like, not having all the information in that, to me, is a misstep. So, what about like day flipping the time before? Like, I think we're consensus. Like, not only should he flip,
I like it.
Yeah, like, he should have flipped actually a really long time ago. Yeah,
I was a yes before, and I'm still a yes now.
Yeah,
like, better late than never.
What do you think? Because I saw this on Twitter from Simon Mee. What do you think about flipping on the first vote? Like, so firstly, he does give himself the opportunity to be 3-2-1 if they vote out Dave, and he could be 3-2-1 out of the game. He's voted for Jordan. He does, like, if somehow Sam plays an idol for Jordan or someone, or they're voting for Sam and 3-2-1 again, and she plays an idol for herself, it could go kind of awry. He could wait for the revote. Does any part of you think maybe he should have waited for it?
No, I don't think so. I think that obviously, like, we see everyone's intentions, but you sort of assume that those three are coming back tight from purgatory. And I think that David needs a new ship to actually jump onto. Mm. And that if he waits until the revote, he doesn't get to claim his part in that move so much. He really fenced that until the last second.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I think the decisive move is better for his game, better for his longevity with this new voting block. And in some ways less risky. I think it was unlikely they were going to 3-2-1 and sort of waste that on David, particularly, like I said, I think they need David moving forward. And hopefully David's sort of looking to the future and seeing that he's valuable to them in a way that he was not valuable to the six he was in.
Yeah, it's definitely a good read on the fact that they do really need him, and it's a credit to them that they make that workability so apparent. He is reading it correctly. They're not going to 3-2-1 him. They're not even considering doing that. So I think diving in and finding that new home is imperative. I think when you flip, especially as an individual, can make you look feckless. It can make you
like
look
you're jumping like on a exactly like way.
You know, cast zero chance of winning the game. Cochrane, for example, like when you're a one person flipper, you can burn everyone, and it's not looking great from a jury perspective for Dave anyway. But I think like joining a new home, being part of that, he doesn't flip back in the fear of the tie the next time either. He's doing a lot of things that I think make him a really core part of that, and that gives him more of a sense of agency. Like we definitely saw in All Stars, Jackie flip, similar thing, big twist, goes from the 6-3 to now 5-3 because you voted someone out, now it's a 4-4. And she's so expendable to them, and there are so many pressures that they take her out. Like Dave makes himself inexpendable. I'm with you. I was with you from the jump. Like no revote necessary. He pulls Josh across, like he follows through on the move, and it's very, very solid. Like I think if you're flipping, it's already a big enough crack without seeming so much like you're blowing in the wind. Like he really, he stepped into it. And I think that that is important. Actually, it was really good. So
And look, I think, you know, if we were seeing the story told in a different way, maybe you're thinking he's held his nerve. He's moved at the right moment and followed through. And, you know, pretending that he knows where he is and that he gets to the end and can tell a story that, you know, feels definitive like that, I think it gives him a better chance than, well, I waited to see, you know, which way the wind was blowing to make sure that I was safe kind of thing.
It is just that he, like, did numerically miss the flip option multiple times.
Oh, so many
purgatory, they came back. Even coming back, they still needed the additional twist. He really missed it. Like, the boat not only had, like, left, the plane had not only, like, taken off, but, like, yeah, no, it's not that they, like, forgot something and came back. Like, they'd reached their destination. The destination was, like, uninhabitable for some reason. They had to come back. And I was like, oh, I think I will get on the plane. It's like, we actually already made the journey, Dave. Like, you actually missed the flight completely. And now I have a lot of analogies, and they're all very flight-based. Maybe I'm seeping into the whole thing.
You're filling in all the confessionals that Josh missed.
Yeah, exactly.
What Josh should have said.
He missed the flight big time. Like, he literally... But and then miraculously was able to jump on in a way that bettered his game, and it was actually pretty good. But man, did he benefit from, you know, some extra time that was given to him. He's like, it's all about timing. It's like, well, we've actually just time traveled back, and now it's okay. So you can't say the original time was the thing, because you actually then like missed the time.
Yeah, but time travel is a thing now, so it's all fine.
Yeah, it's something we do on Survivor. I do want to talk about Jury Villa, so. There's a couple of spicy Jury Villas this week if you haven't checked them out. Jordan goes to Jury Villa, finds out about the idol, and is, like, definitely shocked. I'm like, I can't believe this line. Really took hold. And then Sam comes back. Frosty reception. Does make up with Jesse later in the video. But one of the big talking points is that she thinks Jordan, he's, like, sitting there with, like, two kind of fingers on his face. Like, if you go back, like, kind of like Two-Face. But not like two fingers on his face. So she's mad because she feels like, and they even say to tribal council, she's like, Chrissy says that Jordan's eyes are like darting back and forth. He seems to be giving signals that the idol is real. And Sam's really mad about that because she's like, you're not meant to signal from the jury. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's very tense. So as a juror, what do you feel about this whole interaction?
Oh, I mean, as a juror, it's a different question because I find it really hard to control my face on the jury.
And what about your fingers?
Less hard. Yeah. I mean, I'm not like a big finger signaler. So it's all in the like tight jaw for me. The producers were always screaming at us like, keep your faces calm, no signaling. And like one time we got told off afterwards, we went back in Jury Villa, and in Jury Villa you're like little princes and princesses, and they're like, get you everything you want. And the producers were like, guys, you need to be quiet on the jury. So like I understand that it's difficult to not react. But as a player and a viewer, I think it's unacceptable if the jury communicates like live game information back to the active players. I think that's really poor. It's disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want inactive players to signal with active players. And I don't think the jury should do that. I'm actually going to be like more lenient on this than people might expect, just in Blood versus Water, because I feel like to a degree, the people on that jury are still active players. Like Jordan, Jesse, Sam, who have loved ones in the game. And it's a little bit mixed because there are people there who don't have loved ones in the game. But so the reason that it's so terrible for them to signal to the players is that in a regular season, you go out, you give information. And we've seen this like on Edge of Extinction, information was given about Kelly Wentworth's idol. Chris brought it back and she kind of felt like she was out of the game, but she wasn't. So it got brought back and actually screwed over her ally and Lauren. But and they were still active players, so that's where kind of that miss was. Like, the jury aren't meant to be active players, so there shouldn't be kind of that hybrid relationship happening between people who have everything to lose in the game and nothing to lose in the game. And that's where my trapdoor mentality has come from. I think in Blood versus Water, it's a little softened for me because Jesse actually still has reason to lie at Jury Villa. Like, it's a unique situation where even though he's out of the game, where usually it's like, okay, well, let me tell you all my secrets. Like, what do we have to lose now? Like, he should still, he optimally should still keep lying for Geordie so that maybe like they'll need to like vote for him at the end, like for this kind of thing. Like, there's some merit to still lying. So even if he says that to Jordan, maybe he's still lying. Like, maybe Jordan is playing, like, who kind of knows for me? So it's softened a little bit. And I actually think in hindsight, like I said, I didn't think Jesse had to be trapdoored as much. And I kind of thought it was softened for me in the fact that she could expect that. But I also think it was that she could expect Jeffy to still be actively playing in a game where he has a rooting interest of his brother. And he still is more of an active player than like Andy saying Dave has an idol. Like, Jesse, until he's voted for a winner, is playing the game. He's playing it with Geordie, but from the jury bench. So while I don't think signaling is something I'll ever endorse, to me, the dynamics between the jury and the game are a little bit more murky. And the gameplay and the agendas, I think, are a little bit more real. So, yeah, it's just a little different for me. It's not as stark a contrast, which usually makes that relationship and any kind of using of that relationship for jurors who have nothing to lose, it makes that just a little bit less stark for me.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I mean, if nothing else, you can expect it more because those relationships are real and ongoing and you know, it's Blood versus Water. I guess my feeling, though, is that I am a big believer in the trapdoor.
I'm always pro trapdoors. I'm just saying that, like, in Blood versus Water, I just feel a little bit less like you're out, pick your ball, and go home. Like, but you're not really. Like, you're still a player to a degree.
It would be so hard to maintain that in Jury Villa, the sense of still being a player. And I think that that's what's interesting about Sam entering the jury. Because she is still playing for her own bank account. Like, she could still effectively win. So I think that she really will be pitching and playing, and she would maintain lies at Jury Villa in a way that I think, even if I was playing with my sister, I can just imagine when you get to Jury Villa and you're eating and drinking and you feel like you're back in normal life, they've let you call home. But they didn't let us call home, by the way, anyway.
And my own feelings on them calling home. I don't think they should be able to.
I don't think they should be
in a vacuum where they're going to, like, say you don't want to, like, call a loved one and them to be, like, forgive and forget. Like, if they want to be bitter, like, let the people be, you know, like, they should decide their own feelings. Not, like, the real world.
You should be trapped door.
Exactly.
Trapped door to a vacuum.
And then kept in a prison cell where you have no outside comfort. Ideally,
not even allowed to talk to each other.
Yeah.
I remember.
Exactly.
You know, I've watched Survivor since the start, and I didn't realize that they went to Ponderosa until season 20 or something. And I was outraged the jurors were allowed to talk to each other. I thought they were all kept separate because to me, it's always been that when you're voted out, your active gameplay, other than final tribal council, and then you're allowed to talk, you're allowed to communicate, you vote, like, you're very active there, but you're an observer from the second that you were voted out. And I don't think that you should be allowed to have final words that have game implication. I don't even think you should be allowed final words necessarily. Like, I really believe that any communication that changes, like, you should be allowed to, I want to say something murdery and mafia-y about, like, if I tell you this, I have to kill you. You should be allowed to do that. And that information should stay gone if you've voted the person out that you told it. It should stay sealed away. I know that's not how it happens. I know the jury builder exists, but there was a point when I was shocked just by that, that the fact that the jurors were allowed to talk to each other.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the only thing is that the players are aware of the fact that the jurors do talk to each other and those secrets can come out, and it's something that you have to plan for. But like, I've always thought this, like, I hate when they get to talk to home, take them out of the mindset, affected in any way in this game that they've played. They started in the US where I don't think they can call home in the US, but they started, like, if they've flown your loved ones all the way out to Fiji, but you just got voted out, then your loved ones will come and see you at Ponderosa, and they put in the video and everyone's like, that's so sweet. And I'm like, no, they don't get to see their loved ones out of game, like in the game, okay, like you've earned that reward, that's like a mechanism as part of the game, but like now you're a juror, like do your jury duty, like that's why you're here, like we're not calling home and then you're like, oh this hurt me or whatever, and then someone gives you an opinion on it that changes, like no, you're in a vacuum, you're a trapdoor.
No, don't completely agree. And at the very least, don't bring people out of the game like that. Like, I think that the jury is a unique experience where you like dwell in your own narrative of how the story was and experience everyone else's story they're telling themselves, and I don't think that there should be external interference.
I agree.
And then I don't think that should interfere back with the players until final travel council, and then you can let it rip.
Well, I was shocked that Sam came into the jury villa and said that the idol, like, was, you know, the idol was real. I'm like, you know that they're signaling to me, like, don't confirm it. Like, you keep lying. I know that you, like, it was a weight off her shoulders. She could take a deep breath. And I'm like,
oh no,
because now they're signaling from the jury. So you got to keep lying, Sam. Like, I'm sorry.
We gotta no, keep this can you imagine this with Jesse, though? Can you imagine with Jesse at the dinner table being like, what, are we still doing this?
Yeah. What idol are you talking about? Jesse, really?
This is the ultimate gaslighting. Like, Jesse, huh? I think you must have imagined that.
Yeah, Jesse, I'm worried about you.
Jesse, did anybody else see this idol? Or, like, are you sure you're not seeing things?
Yeah, are you okay? Do you have a headache? Like,
what? No one else can confirm, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's also the fact that she obviously has to come out and start being the transparent person because she has been the liar and she wants them to eventually vote for Mark. Having watched this reception, and it's actually not even just a jury villa reception. Like, in the extended votes, Shay and KJ have votes where they're just basically like to Sam, like, I just need the intensity gone from camp. Like, I just don't want your energy kind of around the camp. I was like, well, that's a lot. Like, that's why people talk about the edit and Sam's paranoia edit. And again, editing tropes qualify with all of that because it all exists. But you cannot deny the way that people actually felt. And Shay and KJ said it in as many words when they voted for her. So with that in mind, do you feel she ever had a chance? Like, could she have wrestled this back at a final tribal council, or is it better for everyone that she at least, like, sits on jury and campaigns for Mark? Or do you feel like there was something there?
I was disappointed. This is the only jury that I've watched, so I don't have a lot of context. But I was really disappointed with how the jury seemed to receive her. Like, again, I sat there and I know how it feels to have someone walking into jury villa, and we were always, no matter what had gone on in the game, you know, we wanted to receive people as warmly as possible and be like, this is out of game now, like, you know, we're here to celebrate and interested to know what happens, but like, it was a real, we always made it a big celebration no matter what had gone on, and I was just disappointed that they couldn't put their hurt feelings aside for just, like, you know, that evening, that dinner to celebrate Sam's game, and that they had this, like, honestly, I thought it was a bit of a bitter silence. I thought that was really, like, I get the feelings are big, but, you know, we had big feelings, but you brought them out the next day in the light of day, and you just take the evening to celebrate each other. So I thought that was disappointing. I think it was probably a reflection of what would have happened to Sam in final tribal council, in which case, again, I think it would have been great for Mark and Sam. In fact, I haven't said this. I think it would have been great for Mark and Sam to be at the end together, because it seems like Sam might have actually deflected a lot of Mark votes to Mark, depending on who was their third. But, yeah, I don't know. What did you think about all that?
I mean, I think if she's next to Mark, there's the fear that they don't want to vote for either of them. Like how they didn't want to vote for Russell or Parvati. They were like so mad at Russell, and they were like mad at how Parvati like enabled him. So they voted for like the third in Sandra.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't considered them sitting there at the end together. I do think that Mark would have had a good shot and continues to have a good shot. He definitely has a more palatable game for a jury. I mean, for Sam, it was such a go big or go home game that it really just would have depended on like how the jurors could reconcile that in that moment, especially like, does Mark come to the jury before that? If he sacrificed in that way that he can start explaining things to people. I actually like to think that, like, I mean, obviously Khan's on Sam's side. I actually like to think that Jesse and Geordi would have come around. Like, they're gamers. They love the show. Geordi's calling himself the Joker. He's trying to be a villain. Like, surely he respects the move, even if he's the one that it's against, you know?
Yeah. And I think once Jesse is on the jury with, once Geordi is on the jury with Jesse, is that a sentence?
Yeah.
Once Geordi is on the jury with Jesse.
And Judas is still in the game. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Oh, that was very good. You did very well. Anyway, once they're together in jury villa, I think that would have really lightened the mood a little bit, because suddenly Jesse's not got so much stake still in the game, and I think Geordi would have had a better attitude to it just in that moment. And Jesse seems like a real, like, in that, like, when they're chatting later, he clearly came around really quickly, and it seems like they, you know, it wasn't sustained. I mean, I don't know how much further that would have turned around for Sam. It was just an incredibly cold reception.
Yeah, and then she makes up with Jesse. Like, I think Jesse and Geordi and Khan are not her issues. I think Michelle, who told us in confessional, was across the line. I think Jordan seemed really mad. Not sure. I don't know enough about Jordan to know, like, how much that would have continued. Since someone like Josh, who seems angry that you didn't do more with your non-idol to protect his cousin when you were fighting for your life, could definitely feel like, I've been personally hurt by this thing. Shay and KJ, who were saying the way that she's made them feel, maybe then it's not even about the move, but just about, like, that clash in energies, as we're saying. Like, I think it would have been hard to drag a lot of that back, and it would have been in, how can you say that anyone has a game that compares to mine? For which she'd be right, especially if she'd have made it to the end. It would be like, the resume is so long and speaks for itself that, like, no matter how you feel about me, which is often a game we see much more for, like, men, Ben, Mike, exactly. There weren't people who really liked him. It wasn't a super social game, but they were like, credit where credit's due. Like, you tick things off the list that we valued. And for Sam, I think it would have been like how much he could do that without people feeling particularly good at her, which is something, you know, we do see more for men, but it happened. So I think it would have been on that. I think there was a chance, but I think it would have been like very tough road ahead for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Much tougher than I realized before watching that. I was amazed.
Yeah. They were mad. But anyway, it seems like everyone has calmed down now. They're all friends. And that's good.
Yeah.
Well, should we get to the chili? Because I think it might be a big and important
controversial
chili. Well, there's going to be some stuff. So let's do it. Take it away, Jacob, Sagan Weinstein, and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. I'll go first. And this was a really hard week for me because I had 5 people I wanted to reward in some capacity. And the order of that as well was hard, even just also choosing who was going to get points. So I think
I've highlighted four.
Well,
do you want to know who I've highlighted in no particular order?
All right. Yeah. I want to see if they match up.
Sam, Geordi, KJ, and Josh with an honourable mention for Dave. He's not highlighted. He's an honourable mention for me.
Okay, so similar names, but some differences. I will give 3 points to Geordi. And I want to say that when Geordie says he lit a fire under KJ, like, no, like, that was KJ's move and she's about to get points for it. But the reason that I give three to Geordie is because, like, the last couple of weeks I keep saying can't give him points until something gets pulled off, and this week it happened. And the whole momentum of the week was through that minority getting success, and he is pushed for it. It's the bait. It's the plans. It's working on Josh and working on Josh until it finally something happens with it. It's those offers. And to galvanize a minority, to bid in the auction, like, I know I keep going on about that, but it's that intentionality. It's that way to approach the game at every second. That looks exhausting. Every player wants to take the out and not have to be working constantly. Yeah, to just eat the burger. But he has come back from purgatory, and through purgatory, never stopped working, never stopped being like, whoever comes back, we're doing this. And honestly, in that spirit, while KJ owns her move, that spirit actually, I think, did a lot. And I'm going to give him 3 points for that, because I think in a week where the Purga 3 really win, it feels like it's his win. And he has been the ringleader. He's obviously been the one to tell it all to us because he has the edit, but I also actually believe it's true. I will give 2 points to KJ. It would have been 3 had she been intentionally bidding for it at the auction. That truly did, because to me, it's like, it's such a big advantage to help you. And how much is it like, how she acted with it, which was amazing, but also how much is it like so much power falling in your lap. And the fact that she was bidding on food and then got this thing through luck, I think the advantage fell in her lap. But then 2 points, because of course she did use it really, really well. So many decisions made, the decision to make it, you know, surprising at the time and not tell day before, the decision not to split the voters, were saying, like, I don't know how much these were group decisions, but she owns it. She takes the offensive rather than doing the defensive move, sends the right people out of tribal council, you know, splits up the pairs, keeps someone there in Jordan to kind of be the patsy, keeps Sam around, hopefully, to flesh an idol, keeps Dave around, vocalizes the Dave thing, as we've said, a lot of great things there. So 2 points to her. I will give 1 point to Dave. Actually giving a juicy Dave his first point. You know, he eventually flipped, but it's not really about that. For me, it's just the fact that I really do credit him as well as Geordie in pulling Josh over. And yeah, he just voted for Josh's cousin. And, you know, Josh, as we said, has his own stuff going on. But then he does vocalize him in the voting confessional. Like, he's mad at Sam. And those fans, like, he truly is mad at Sam. And those fans have been flamed by Juicy Dave. So a point to him for that, because I do think, instead of becoming expendable, like, he makes a strong move and he pushes it through and he does actual work in that. I'll give an honorable mention to Sam. A little bit too much for me at that first tribal council, as we said, but, like, did work the implicit immunity to stay around in ridiculous circumstances. Super impressive. And the great sacrifice plan that was hers, like, just even the innovation in that, and something that I personally agree with, like, that to me is the honorable mention. And I'll also give an honorable mention to Mark. He was the 5th name I had. I just really love, like, the subtlety of giving the scarf. I think, like, that, of all the things in implicit immunity, that to me was what I liked the most from that tribal council. So even though they technically lost this week, it was on their terms, it was through their decision, whether you agree or disagree, it was the decision that they made, and there was merit to it. So I'm giving them both honorable mentions for that. So yeah, a lot of good, I thought. So where are you going with it?
Yeah, okay. I'm still, like, I'm really thinking hard, because the only thing I was sure about was that KJ fit into the 2 point spot.
Okay.
I've got KJ on 2 points because, again, I thought she played the move perfectly, and I really liked how she presented it in front of the jury. I think she did it really actively and aggressively, and I think that's what she needed to do. I also think she's been underrated in a lot of ways. So 2 points to KJ, but then I'm really, like, you know, I loved Mark and Sam leaving those two idols back at camp. I thought that was clever, and I thought it showed a lot of forward thinking, and that they were, like you said, really innovative. Like, they were very aware of their, like, two bites of the apple, and willing to have one of them fall on their sword if need be. I didn't like it as much the next round on, but I just liked that move so much that I feel like Mark and Sam deserve points for it. I'm probably going to put them on Sam, because she seemed to be more actively driving the plan.
Yeah, and Mark even said on Twitter, like, it's her legal jargon and knowledge of knowing, like, what's
exactly
ownership and whatever. So that's, you know, reading the fine print is a move for sure.
And then Geordie, I also wanted to give points to, particularly, I mean, you've said it all already, but I think that he has approached his position and his story really well, and he's really selling that, at least to the cameras, but I also think to the other players and to the jury. And so even though it wasn't really his decisions at any point in the last couple of rounds so much as it was his galvanizing and pushing, I do think that deserves points. So who gets three and who gets one?
Yeah, oh my God.
I think I'm going to actually give the three to Geordie because he won out.
Yes.
So it'd be three to Geordie, two to KJ, and one to Sam.
Mm-hmm. And then you wanted to honor Josh mention. Making the move.
Well, I just, like, I'd circled Josh because, I mean, he made me cry a lot. He's going to be a dad, and I'm very affected by that. But I also think that he's positioned himself really well all game, and I think that his lip was correct, but he can't possibly credit it because he didn't lip. So that was confusing. So no points for Josh.
Yeah. All right. Well, drum roll, please, because Sam just won the chili out of the game.
Yay!
But officially the winner of the chili.
Congratulations, Sam.
Is uncatchable. So
wow.
Sam was a runaway train on this season. She went up to 28 points. Then next we now have Mark and Geordie on 12, Josh on 10,
wow.
Nina left on 9, Jesse left on 8. Then we have KJ on 6, Sandra left on 6, Michelle and Khan both left on 2, and Dave is on 1. So,
gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some of Sam's points like are partly shared with Mark, but given that if Mark wins the money, it'll be fully shared with Sam, that seems fair.
Exactly. I mean, like, this feels so right.
They were both playing for the chizzy.
Yeah. Well, only one gets to win the chizzy. Like, you know what? That's the thing. It's like you can share the money, but can you share the chizzy mug? No. Only the so chizzy winner gets to drink from the chizzy mug, which I now sent to chizzy winner. So what a victory for Sam. Amazing. This feels so right. Like, for her to go out in the week where she wins the chizzy, like, what a legacy. So happy this has happened in this week. It's not like, all right, well, people can catch her. We'll see if they get points or if they fall. No, like, no one can catch her. No one can get in the next 2 weeks. Not one person can catch her, even remotely.
How cool. What a nice feeling.
Yeah. So, Sam, congratulations. What a great week for you. This was, I'm sure, everything you wanted. We made it work. So, yeah, that's the chili. Big week. All right. Let's get to some JLP tweets. Take it away, Bradley Pines and Will from America.
Watch as you scroll. A JLP's on a roll. It could be punishing logs or guys chugging on poles. What will he say? It could make your whole day. The show's not complete without a JLP tweet.
All right. So, actually, no dirty tweets from JLP this week. They were very, obviously PG challenges, but he had some thoughts. He says, what is it with everyone jumping straight to the max bid of $500? Next time I may need to explain how bidding works.
Really takes away from his job as the auctioneer, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's like, but this is $500. Don't need you.
We bought a house. We bought a house recently, and I think the auctioneers really enjoy that part of their work, so I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's like if everyone's just jumping to $500, it's not really an auction. It's just kind of people buying things for $500.
Yeah.
So I do see why that upsets him. Although it makes a lot of sense to just be like, oh, I want that thing. I'll just buy that thing. So in the survivor auction, it makes sense. He says, was Shay giving up her letter for the others a selfless act or a smart move? Maybe a bit of both. And I wanted to mention this because
We didn't even discuss.
Yeah, like, there's nothing Shay can do here. Like, this isn't a move at all. Like, this is a sig. What is she, the patron saint of letters? Like, no, like, she has to give it up. Like, as a human, she has to give it up.
Yeah. And you don't get any credit for it either. It's just like, oh, I just got nothing then. I got, like, a negative. I bid on a negative.
Yeah. It's like, you get no credit for doing it because it's so obvious that you have to. But if you don't do it, everyone would be like, what the hell? Like, you just took your one letter. Even though they just voted her to purgatory, it would be like, that's bizarre. That you did that. Yeah. And then they kept thanking her.
It's even worse. I feel like, because I had that, I had to go through a whole challenge to win nothing. When everyone got their letters on our season.
Oh, yeah. But you gave everyone that. You did the same thing.
No, but I still got my letter.
Okay.
Hers is worse. Hers is way worse.
You spent so much time and effort to win a challenge, and then they said you could
have. I didn't win anything.
They said that you can have, what was it, like a spa day or something? You and then
it was like It sounded great. It was like, I mean, it didn't sound great because it was a version. I thought it was going to be more complicated, but it was like a spa retreat and your letter from home and pizza and blah, blah, blah.
Or you all
and
get like, letter.
You can have all of that or everyone gets their letter. And obviously everyone gets their letter. Like, you don't get any credit because it's such a, like, it's just a not negative. It's a negative of a negative. So, you know, didn't win anything. It was just a waste of time.
Such a waste of
time. Yeah, just such a waste of time. Whereas Shay's was like actively, she lost something, which is pretty rubbish.
I mean, you lost your time and energy that you put into that challenge, like when energy is in short supply on Survivor, and then you literally, and it's not even like interesting because it's not like, well, one person might have not given it up. Like, no, every person has to. I can only imagine the thought process that is like, ugh. Like, okay.
Yeah, and everyone's thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the closest I felt to all those people coming back from purgatory. It's just like, that was a waste of time.
Well, you would feel good, though, if one of the letters was, like, the best letter in Survivor history and, like, someone found out that their wife, their fiance was pregnant.
Best letter in Survivor history.
You'd be like, okay, I actually feel pretty good that it was my act that made that happen of all the
those little ultrasound pictures in his face when he realized what they were. Oh.
That was beautiful.
It just like killed me.
It was truly incredible.
That just broke me.
It was a beautiful, beautiful moment. JLP tweets, would you make a deal with the Joker or with two Oscar-winning actors? And a lot of people pulled this up because two Joker actors have won Oscars. So it like either or, like, it, you know, you can do both.
Not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we've had. We had Joaquin Phoenix. We had Heath Ledger, both Jokers who have won Oscars. So, weird way to put that. The Batman product placement in the season is ridiculous. JLP says, Jordan, you were a worthy co-pilot, but KJ the flight attendant spilled that cup of tea in your lap, sending you into a nosedive. And I want to point this out because Jordan's not even a pilot. And, you know, like, Josh isn't even part of this interaction and it's still pilot-based because not only is, like, for Josh until this week, all we knew about him was that he was a pilot. Like, most of what we knew about Jordan was that he was, like, a pilot's cousin. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
The wingman.
Yeah.
Are wingmen even actually a plane thing?
I don't know.
Or is it just a dating thing?
I don't know a lot about planes.
No, me neither.
He also tweeted, day 40 and it's game on. Better late than never. I just put that in for the shade the JLP has been delivering to the season. Like, before this week, he was like, if someone doesn't flip tonight, I'm going to lose it. Like,
who was that, directed at Dave? Or was it directed at KJ?
I think in general, it's just like all of you. Like, what's been happening?
Finally.
Yeah, like, yeah. I've had to watch it too.
We delivered you a clue that said that you can't miss it.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The totally not suspicious clue. Well, question from the listeners. Nick Fishman says, Mark used, in hindsight, terrible Batman metaphor to describe what he hoped for. What is a better one you could think of for it? I would say Batman and Robin, not Batman and Harvey Dent, who becomes a villain. Like, Batman and Alfred, literally any of Batman's allies that aren't people who become evil villains. Yeah.
Wait, but I mean, I haven't seen Batman. Really,
it's really not about this Batman. Like, it's Batman, like, as a concept.
No, like, I don't know how much this is saying about myself, but, like, I think I've only ever seen the Heath Ledger one, only because I really like Heath Ledger.
But that's the one they're mostly referring to, because it's all about Harvey Dent.
That's a long time ago.
No, that's the one, The Dark Knight. Who's Harvey Dent? Okay, well, then
is he Two-Face?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I remember Two-Face.
Okay, well, how can you forget? Aaron Eckhart, then his face was burned off. It's hard to forget.
Oh, my God, yeah, I do. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what Josh did. Like, when Josh told Sam to play the idol, it was like when he turned, then his face was half burned off, and you're like, "Oh, you're Two-Faced." Well, that's what they did.
Well, I think that makes sense. That he's very Two-Faced. He's actually a baddie.
Yeah, but why did Mark manifest that? Like, Mark of all people shouldn't want him to turn against it. Like, for sure.
Yeah.
For him, for Jordy, but not for Mark.
Maybe he knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he also can't remember what happened in that movie.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like,
isn't there that one guy, Two-Face?
Yeah, he's like, who were characters from that movie? Like Mark, that's not how it goes for The Dark Knight, how you want it to go. Like, Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. He's Robin.
Yes.
Robin, I remember from the cartoon.
Yeah. Robin, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, like, alluded to be Robin. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We already said Sam is Catwoman, so a lot going on. And I really want to watch The Dark Knight right now. Like, it's definitely working on me, the product placement. Like, I might watch The Dark Knight soon.
You're making me feel very inadequate by how much I don't know about Batman. and I also still really like Heath Ledger. So,
yeah. It's a phenomenal
one day I'll get the time.
Yeah. Okay. Apothecary asks, are we carrying on Hogwarts House sorting tradition? Which, you know, we are. Got to do it.
Of course.
That's why people make it to the end of the game, stay tight in a strong majority. They're like, we want to get to the point where we can be sorted into Hogwarts houses. It's breaking the game.
Yeah.
So let's start. What about Sam? What are we thinking?
Well, do you know, speaking of jury villa, I am with my jury already sorted Mark and Sam. And with people who knew them way better than me. So I think we definitely made Mark a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Like, no questions, right?
Yeah.
Strong
Gryffindor in every conceivable way.
I cannot remember if we made Sam a Gryffindor or a Slytherin, because I think that we felt she was very, in everyone's ear. And when I say we, I don't really mean me, because I didn't play with Sam. But I think that we might have made her a Slytherin, which is a compliment, I would say. And I would probably stick by it. Like, she's definitely part Gryffindor, but I think that she definitely did some Slytherin-y things. Good Slytherin.
I think she's a Gryffindor in real life, but she definitely plays the game like a Slytherin. I could
score. And very purposely.
Yeah. I think
you choose that. She lets you choose.
Yeah, well, she made the most ruthless move ever. For sure, she played like a Slytherin.
Do you know, I just don't even think it was the most ruthless move ever. Like, to me, the Eric Reichenbach, Black Widow Brigade thing was more ruthless.
Yeah. Well, they were laughing.
And less on the fly. It was very calculated. And I loved that too, I have to say. That's one of my favorite moves of all time. I just think it was like on the fly. She was doing the best she could, and it was brutal, but it's a brutal game. I don't think it was like, wouldn't make it top five brutal things that happen in Survivor.
But maybe Australian Survivor, and maybe that's been the reaction, because our Australian audience is like, mateship. But I literally saw comments that were like, it's un-Australian. It's like, what is Australian? Like, I'm genuinely asking because I'm an immigrant,
that's fine,
but like, isn't it? like what? That's what it says in the Constitution. Do we even have a Constitution? It's like, oh, you can't steal idols in Survivor. Well, okay. We can't do that.
How much is it stealing if someone gives it to you? I don't know.
You're not allowed to steal. You're allowed to take what is given to you by someone else.
Yeah. I think that Sam was like really on board with like owning the villainy of it. And then it just like got taken up, I think, in like public perception of that being a bad thing for some reason. And I didn't think it was anything that a lot of other players wouldn't have done if they had thought of it in the moment, given the opportunity.
Mm. She did call her parents, as we're saying, you know, you shouldn't, but she did. Well, they do. They allow it. Like, leaving the game, and she's in the car, and she's like, I stole someone's idol. And they're like, oh, sweetie. They're like laughing. I thought that interaction was like really funny.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah. Oh, you.
No, I'd stick with Slytherin.
I don't know. I think that she is such a strong Gryffindor to me in what I can sense of her, but she definitely played like hardcore Slytherin.
I mean, we're just talking about the game, like putting people in a box that they are in the game. And she said more than once, like, this is not who I am in real life. Just like leading into this game person.
But I think that shows that, because she is different in real life. Like, it is, I think, quite a stark difference.
It's a hard thing to do.
What about Geordie? Is that another Gryffindor? He so badly wants to be a Slytherin. That's the thing.
But he really feels not. No, to me, he almost feels like a Hufflepuff. He's like such a friendly, social guy.
Oh, he's just been like, he keeps saying have a crack, and he's too out front to be a Hufflepuff. Like, Hufflepuffs are wallflowers.
No, have a crack. Have a crack is like the Hufflepuff motto. That's what it means in Latin. Have a crack. He's like, come on, guys, we can do it. Let's have a crack. It's worth a try. Come on. He's a gardener.
In real life, maybe Hufflepuff. in what he wants to be Slytherin, I think in the role he's supposed to be of, like, the brave underdog, Gryffindor. Like, in definitely in the way he's been, like, pigeonholed in the show as, like, our last hope. He's Harry Potter.
Tricky to place, I think. Because he doesn't want to be a Gryffindor. And also, even the way that he's being an underdog, he's like, you know, he's trying to be sneaky about it. He's trying to be devious. He's just, like, having to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. I would make him a Hufflepuff because I think he is, he's got a really, like, cheerful attitude to, he's, like, plugging away at being at the bottom. But he wants to be a Slytherin.
Yeah. What about KJ?
Oh, Hufflepuff.
I see her as a Hufflepuff as well. I mean, I think there's some Ravenclaw stuff there. I think, like, she's cerebral in ways, but
that's true.
I see Hufflepuff more because she's, I can see, like, the mum thing. She's very sweet, very caring.
Mm.
Even the way, like, she's, like, and again, it's strategic, so there is that Ravenclaw thing there and it's intentional, but even, like, willing to be the second and kind of taking that, like, you know.
The team, yeah.
Yeah, so it's yeah, for sure, I think. Hufflepuff. Mm. Shay, I would say Hufflepuff.
I'd say Gryffindor.
I could see Gryffindor. I do. I think that she's very obviously very strong, but it's like the letter thing for me in the way she authentically is like, I'd rather see 8 happy people than me be happy. And I'm like, it's that energy. Like when you're like a yogi, for example, like, yes, you can like be upside down for hours and that's so strong. And that's like Gryffindor and strength. But then there's also like, you're also probably like love and light and calm. And like, I think that's what Shay is. So that's why I see Hufflepuff.
Yeah, but you can see the letter giving thing as a very like integrity and honor type thing as well, which is very Gryffindor. We're so in such disagreement today.
Yeah.
But I can also see what you meant about the Hufflepuff. And it's true, she's clearly like quite a genuine and benign person, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was thinking, is that because we always get like insights out of doing this, and like I think in All Sides it was like they're all Gryffindor, that's why it's been so matriarchy. Like, but I think when I was thinking through this, I was like, this is a lot of Hufflepuff, and maybe that's why it's been a bit more passive and been a bit more like Mark and Sam running things because they've been up against people like Dave, for example. Hufflepuff?
Hufflepuff, absolutely.
Yeah, I think Dave is a Hufflepuff.
Yep, definitely.
And then Chrissy, Hufflepuff, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like she's definitely like, there's probably parts of like Gryffindor there, but like it's again, it's like she's loving and nurturing and caring and social, like Hufflepuff. Like this is a Hufflepuff cast. This is why this gone this way.
It's actually overwhelming when you look at it.
Josh, I could see as like Ravenclaw with the numbers.
Oh no, I call Josh a Ravenclaw definitely.
Yeah, Ravenclaw. So Ravenclaw for Josh, but then like Jordan was probably Hufflepuff. Like this is why. Like this, are we seeing why the game went the way that it did, Michelle? Michelle, but could be, she seems nice, maybe a Hufflepuff. Like, maybe, is it that we don't have enough of an edit that we're calling everyone a Hufflepuff? Or, like, are these people authentically Hufflepuffs and that's why the direction has gone this way? Like, I feel like that's the whole reason the whole game has gone the way that it's been. It's just, like, a Hufflepuff cast of nice people.
Yeah, that's
nice
fascinating. And I think that's why we have seen so much of Sam and called it being so, like, she seemed like such a gamey player. Because she's the only one we've called a Slytherin.
Yeah, that's it.
In general, the game needs more Slytherins.
There is so much insight on the Hogwarts house order. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, every
time. It tells you so much about the game.
So much. It's crazy how much we get out of it. Yeah. So we've done it. We've sorted it. We've got our insights from the Sorting Hat. Tessa, this has been super, super fun. I would ask where people can find you, but as I've said, like, you know, they can't really listen to this podcast.
Exactly. No. It's for the best. Yeah. I mean, I've heard about what a rough time Sam's had on the socials, and it just makes me glad to stay away from that wasteland. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good take. So, I mean, speaking of, the Exit podcast is already out with Jordan and Sam. Sam and I spoke a lot about that. We're going to do a longer deep dive after the season, but yeah, some really good insights as well from Jordan that we discussed on this podcast and getting into that with Sam. So check that out. Next week on Australian Survivor Recap, we will be talking with Ricard. So that's fun because he's watched the whole season. Like I feel like all the other players who said they were going to watch him podcast about it have not, but Ricard has. And I'm just impressed because it's so much content.
Oh my God, I can't wait to hear what Ricard thinks. Has he watched Australian Survivor before?
Yeah, I think he has. So... That should be really
exciting.
Fun. Yes.
So I loved him.
A lot going on. Obviously doing Survivor Global for season 42 last week or this week still. I talked with Harry Hills, and then next week I'm doing a Survivor Global Stockwatch crossover with Taryn Armstrong. So that should be really fun. A lot of different stuff happening on the Rehap Ups feed. If you're on the Rehap Ups feed, Temptation Island has just started, which Maggie and Kirsten are covering. And check out the BNP as well with Mike and Liana if you are missing Mike's takes, but he will be back on with me for the finale with Nick, hopefully, in a couple of weeks as well. Check me out on Memo. Thank you again to everyone who has sent in requests. That's been so much fun throughout the season. One of my favorite things about interacting with fans through this season. Check out the Survivor Improv Comedy at the Melbourne Comedy Festival with the discount code RHAP if you want to go see that in April. And yeah, follow me at Shannon Gage. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed because there's clearly a lot going on. But Tessa, thank you so much. I feel like, you know, I feel like it was super insightful. We got a lot of analysis out. And then at the end, we're like, but no, we solved the whole season because everyone's a Hubble. But like we should move that to the beginning of the podcast. It provides clarity on everything. And then we keep
so
talking about it. Yeah. Damn,
yeah, but
time.
Also casting, I think casting should consider looking at their Hogwarts houses. Maybe they could, we could consult on this to help casting even things out a little bit.
Can you imagine if casting was like, all right, you've done your interview, you've sent in your video, will you put on this hat?
Because we
need to see something.
It could be a part of, you know, the selection process. You do your, like, physical bit, you do, like, the psychologist and that. But we just need you to also go through the sorting.
Go to Pottermore, do the sorting, because we can't have too many Hufflepuffs, because last time we did that, we had to put in a really overpowered twist to stop the begonging. So we're pretty low on the Hufflepuffs now. We'll be casting a lot more Slytherins. So, yeah, that's what it is.
Brilliant.
We fixed it. We fixed Survivor, so it's done.
You're welcome.
But thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and I will see you with Ricard next week. Bye.
Australian Survivor
is a
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans,
12 ordinary Australians,
16 New Zealanders,
£1 million.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.